Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio.
Yes, as we suffer the brutal Florida winter for about the next 3 weeks until we get back to springtime, I think, you know, I'm actually not feeling too bad. I sound terrible. I mean, I really do. It's kind of funny. But I'm a lot better than I was yesterday. And so this stuff works, you know, the vitamin D3. You know, I really do sound terrible. It's funny. But, you know, your vitamin D3, your vitamin C, I took 2,000 milligrams of that yesterday, my zinc and my quercetin. And, you know, a lot of sleep, and I still able to get a bunch of work done, too. I've got a new, brand new Santa Rosa Volunteers piece on the real wall of separation between church and state. So that's there. So I'm kind of snuggling up to the microphone a little closer than usual here, simply because I don't have my normal booming, powerful voice to, you know, to rattle across the earth, you know, shaking everything in its path. So I'll do the best I can. But fortunately, we have a lot of other folks coming in. The good news is, even though this is Christmas week, everybody's checking in. Shelby's going to be here. Jean's already here, of course. Jean's wonderful. Jean's already here. Shelby's going to be here with Cruise and Travel. Josie's going to be here with the Latino Report. Paulette's going to be here with Naughty and Nice Foods, which is mostly related to calories. I don't know where your minds are, folks. Stop that. Dancy's going to be here with wine, weed, and wellness, which should be a whole lot of fun. But in the meantime, let's get to our favorite calm, rational person here who never flies off the handle, Jean Vernick.
When all is falling apart around you, when people are looking to you for answers you don't have, when you need a calm, reassuring voice to settle your fragile nerves, well, you've come to the right place. The always serene and tranquil, reasoned and measured, stable and sedate Jean Vernick, producer of the Action Radio Citizen Legislature, takes a few minutes each week at this time to reflect on her favorite phrase, "Are you kidding me?" And now, Jean Vernick.
Good morning, Jean.
Hey, good morning. You do sound better than yesterday.
Oh, really? Because I don't feel like I sound better. In fact, it's weird.
No.
You know, it's funny, my it's from coughing and from sneezing so much, mostly sneezing. Well, it's amazing how much power you can put behind a sneeze when you're not feeling well.
It really is,
that's explosive. It's a good thing to have walls here.
Yeah.
Anyway, but thank you. I'm glad I sound better. This is, like I say, another day or two, and this should be fine. You know, you take your immune boosting stuff, and you get some sleep, and drink plenty of fluids. I got a lot of orange juice, water. I don't have any chicken soup though. I should probably get some of that. Hey, you need some Jewish penicillin. You want some penicillin? The other works. Okay, you got the Jewish. You got the chicken soup. You know, you sit down. You take it easy. You got some sleep. You have some more soup. You'll be okay. Okay, what are you waiting for? Okay, fine. Go ahead. Yeah, there we go.
But, you know, it is amazing how chicken soup does soothe the soul when you're sick. You know, you're not feeling good. Bowl of chicken soup, it's like, yep, just what you need.
Yeah, but the only time I had it, even Judy Mikovits, I was just listening I was watching a video while I was listening to it, because I'm still working, a video with her this morning, and she says, yeah, take your immune boost, even if you've had the vaccine, or if you're feeling just even a little bit sick, and she says, immediately, you know, get your chicken soup. This is a microbiologist, you know, world-renowned expert. Get your chicken soup. Oh, thanks, Judy. Okay, I will.
Yeah,
it's really funny. But she says that and get to take your vitamins and all that kind of stuff. But she says something really interesting that it goes along with my theory too, that everything the government's done is designed to create fear and anxiety. And that fear, it's part of what we talked about yesterday with the mass psychosis. Fear and anxiety are the greatest destroyers of your immune system. So if you're trying to preserve the virus and keep it around so you can sell more and more vaccines, the surest way to do that is with basically terror, fear and anxiety, and destroy people's immune system as much as possible, then put them all together in a home, take away their livelihoods, put as much stress on them as possible so they can't fight off the disease. And guess what? It's still here. It would have been gone, you know, a year ago. Anyway, that's about a little two cents worth, you know.
Is Biden talking is tonight or this afternoon?
It doesn't matter. I'm probably going to miss it. Yeah.
Well, it doesn't matter for me either, but I was just wondering or questioning. And the reason I'm saying that would you think that what you bring up really resonates with me for the fact that, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I heard clips of what he talked about, I don't know, within the last couple days about this winter being the worst winter for those of us that aren't vaccinated. And
oh, yeah, we're going to die in the streets.
But the thing is with that, Greg, I don't ever remember a president. And granted, I didn't follow a whole lot because not even very many years ago, I could care less about politics until I woke up and realized that I'm part of the reason why we're in this situation because I really didn't
politics
care
cares about
it.
You. Politics
yeah,
cares
exactly.
about you whether
but,
you care about it or not, yeah.
Right, but how, I mean, for two things that really gets me is one, he's given the vaccinated people a false sense of security because they are the ones that are mainly in the hospitals now, okay? Mm-hmm. And I was listening to something last night, and they said that the number of Americans that are vaccinated, nobody really knows because they think the numbers may be inflated.
Oh,
so
gee, what a surprise.
What
I'm shocked. I'm shocked, Jean. That's what I am. I'm shocked. Absolutely shocked. With all the truth we've heard for the past 2 years, I'm absolutely shocked that they're saying more people are vaccinated than are actually vaccinated, which would go to show that the reason they're trying to push so hard, if everybody's already vaccinated, why are they pushing to get people vaccinated? That seems a little contradictory, doesn't it?
Right. Well, the fact that they're saying now that the unvaccinated people are the only ones that are going to have a horrible next year full of sickness and death and doom, because we didn't get the vaccine. And I'm just like, but that don't make any sense. If so many people are vaccinated, we're the minority, the very few minority at that.
Yeah, they should be protecting us, right? The vaccinated
yeah.
should be protecting us.
yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it's but what I was getting at was, you talk about doom and gloom, listening uh-huh. to him, I really believe that is what makes people sick. Because
absolutely.
Why? When you're done listening to him, there's no joy. There's no positiveness. Regardless what it is, he never says anything positive. Well, the thing is, mm-hmm. he can't even get a coherent thought out, which is the scary thing. And mm-hmm. his sidekick is even worse that, you know, I mean, she's not even doing the job she was supposed to do. What's she doing on the board?
Yes, she is.
Nothing.
Her job is to be the party girl. Her job is to sit in that place so nobody actually good becomes vice president, so nobody actually good replaces Biden. That's what her job is. Her job is to make somebody who's so horrible actually look better than they would be otherwise. That's her job.
Yeah, well, and she's sure not making herself look better. You know, her colors are coming out, too. It's just crazy. But
well, she can.
It's like, I mean, yeah. It's really sad because, really, I would say people need to listen to the president to find out what's going on. But, one, you can't do that anymore. I can't even say that anymore. I mean, not that I ever could, but it's like, why would you want to listen to someone that lies? And it's clueless.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't make any sense. But, you know, and then to think that, okay, I still don't understand this. The supply chain. Supposedly there's so many ships off of California, they can't mm-hmm. even dock anymore there. What mm-hmm. is going on? I thought they were going to be open 24/7 to get these containers unloaded. But we know that wasn't true because
the
truck mandates that you have to have a truck that's whatever, so many years old, and it has to be environmentally friendly and all this stuff. It's like, what are in these cargo ships that can just stay out in la-la land for months?
Well, there's stuff
and why
that can't
don't
stay
they
out
let
for months.
Go
any produce. There's produce. There's all kinds of things that we used to grow here. Now, here's the thing. The problem, the choke, anytime you have a supply chain, anytime there's a choke point in the supply chain, it holds up the entire supply chain, right? It's like flow control. You know when you fly from place to place, you know, if you want to fly from Chicago to New York, right? And New York is fogged in and the weather's crappy. They used to just have you take off and hold over New York and you kind of like stack. But that would cost too much fuel. So now you can't take off until there's a place for you to land in New York. That's called flow control. Well, same thing works for the supply chain. You know, you can't dock until there are trucks that are going to be there to pick up your containers and move them out. Otherwise, you're just going to sit there on the dock and the containers are going to take up space. Well, they don't have the space because there's too many containers
right.
there already. So there's two fundamental problems. And it really revolves around the trucks, right? So you've got California did two really stupid things because the supply problems are all in California. California is the choke point. Right, L.A., Long Beach, and Los Angeles are probably the two biggest harbors in the country, especially combined. Right, so and our biggest trading partners right now in Asia. All right, so you got the whole China, you know, bringing in all the stuff to us cheaply. It all comes into Los Angeles, Long Beach. Why it doesn't come into Portland and Seattle? I don't know. They're the ones that should be operating 24/7. And Oakland is a huge port. Oakland should be operating 24/7. Or Florida? Well, no, because Florida. See, you got to remember these container ships are big. They can't get through the Panama Canal, so they're not going to get here. It's too long a trip the other way, you know, around India, you know, around Africa, and then to get here, you know. So they're really, unless they want to go around Cape Horn, you know, from China, that's a long way to go. And Cape Horn's really the worst weather in the world. So I mean, how many ships would they lose going around Cape Horn? That's what the canal's for. But the thing is that the canal was built in 1910. You know, it's Teddy Roosevelt. So it was built when ships were smaller. And a lot of our Navy can't go through the Panama Canal either, especially the aircraft carriers.
Oh, yeah.
Now, they're trying to build a new one, but you haven't heard much about that yet because I think China owns it, which is another problem. All right. So there's two laws. The first law that doesn't work for the truckers is they have ridiculous – they have unacceptable environmental regulations that are so strict the trucks can't meet them. And what's called is particulates. Now, diesel emits particles, and they call it particulate – you know, matter. Okay. So diesel makes particles more so than gas. Right. And so the particles aren't necessarily dangerous. I mean, they're visible, but the chemicals that the diesel produces are where the problem is, excuse me. Oh God, it's gonna be a long day. It's gonna be another long day. Yeah. But I'm a trooper. I'm here. But the gasoline, same thing, you know, it's the fumes. The chemicals in the fumes that you know, the carbon monoxide that kills you, you know, if you run a car in an enclosed space.
Right.
The particulates aren't necessarily bad, but, you know, California. The California has a really a communist government department called the California Air Resources Board that is filled with a bunch of absolute, well, communists. I mean, they're dictating everything. They don't believe in free enterprise. They don't believe in anything. So they're trying to shut down the trucking industry. They made it so that you couldn't drive a car with an old carburetor because they didn't think they were efficient enough. Oh, excuse me again. I'm trying to get away from the mic.
Bless you.
My body doesn't give me a lot of time to, you know, it's no time to grab the mute button, so I apologize in advance. So they're making it so strict the truckers can't operate, and they're charging them ridiculous amounts of money that the truckers, the independent truckers, don't have. Well, and the second problem is they're saying that the independent truckers can't work. You know, they want them to be hourly employees. They want them to be working for a company. They want to have wages and things. And if you're an independent trucker, you make your money by being independent, by working the hours you want to work, by taking the loads you want to take, by buying your own truck, keeping your truck up to your standards, you know, so that it's comfortable, it's fun, it's got a big, you know, bunk up top, you got a nice little stereo in there. So, you know, if you're going to spend all your time on the road, and a lot of times husband and wife teams are on the road too, tandem drivers,
right.
They live there. They live on their truck. And all of a sudden California says you can't do that. You have to work for somebody else. So there, the supply chain problem is, as usual, it's a government problem. It's not an environmental.
Right.
Well, you know, it's a government problem. So the government's helping the supply chain. There's another thing you mentioned earlier that I wanted to talk about. Oh, yeah, doom and gloom. Let me play something as an intro to doom and gloom. I'm going to put a laugh track, you know, based on what I was learning yesterday about ridicule and its usefulness, you know, to defeating tyrannical leaders. I'm going to do a laugh track. But speaking of doom and gloom, I made this actually before the election. I made this back in like October last, almost a year ago. Check this out. Yeah, I played it before.
Joe Biden's Dark Winter. No freedom, no liberty, no guns, no representation, no oil, no coal, no nuclear power, no space force, no constitution, no family gatherings, no vacations, just taxes, work, misery, masks, lockdowns, and ever more government. This is what will happen if you let Marxists steal the election. This has been a public service announcement of Action Radio, reminding you it's time to get off your butt and save your country.
It still is, by the way, even though I made it before the election. Yeah. All right, let's go to the newsroom, and I got a little bit for you. So, newsroom. All right, come off the teletype. I need a ripping sound. DC clothesline. White House tells unvaxxed Americans to prepare to die. Isn't that sweet? Hey, Merry Christmas, prepare to die. There's got to be a song in there somewhere. Merry Christmas, prepare to die. Merry Christmas, prepare to die. I'm sorry, but this guy, you couldn't make this stuff up, right? I mean, it's so bad, it's funny. All right, so I'm going to find a laugh track after the show.
Yeah.
I'll put it on there.
Merry Christmas
so I can read stuff like this. What's that?
I said Merry
Happy
Christmas
death.
To you. Yeah.
Your days are soon through.
Yeah, exactly.
We liked having you vote for me, but now it's on you. I don't know, whatever. Yeah. So what?
Yeah, that would be a good one.
Yeah, I'll work on it too. I should start writing music. Yeah. Anyway, so White House tells unvaxxed Americans to prepare to die. You're looking at a winter of severe illness and death, December 20th. So this would have been yesterday. Chris Menahan from DC Clothesline, who says, Actually, whitehouse.gov, we are intent on not letting Omicron disrupt work and school for the vaccinated. Hey, it doesn't care about the rest of us, right? They're just trying to save the vaccine. Well, the vaccinated caused the damn variant. I mean, this is the funny thing. The variants, you know, there were no variants before the vaccines. So anybody who can look at this logically will say, okay, well, the more vaccines we have, the more variants are created, the more people are getting sick, more people have died under Biden. Why? Because their immune system is compromised. Why? Because they got vaccinated. So, again, this is all about perpetuating the virus as long as possible. They're trying to save the virus, not the people. This is the first government program I've ever seen in history. History of any country that saves the virus over the people.
Well, Greg, it really doesn't make any sense when supposedly all these people are vaccinated, yet more people have died under Biden's watch than they did under Trump's watch.
Yeah, oh, exactly. Why? Because Trump didn't have vaccines. Trump didn't have vaccines.
Exactly.
It was December. It was after the election they came out. Excuse me. Oh, that was terrible. In fact, it's interesting that, if I remember, Pfizer purposely withheld vaccines until after the election. Remember that? They weren't going to release them during Trump's term?
Did you hear, though, that one of the former Pfizer's VPs and other people have filed charges with International Criminal Court for Fauci and Gates and Big Pharma?
Oh, good. Well, let's see how far that goes.
Crimes against humanity. That's a Pfizer VP. So don't tell me there's not something going on with
I'll see how long
you know, the safeness of this, I don't know, vaccine.
Well,
they're
people's conscience.
What I'm gonna call it.
You know, what if you're a person of conscience? What if you believe in pharmaceuticals? What if you believe they make life better? And I think to a large extent they do, okay? I was given a drug. So there was a private company that developed the drug that put me under so I could have my rather invasive medical procedure this week, all right? Good for them. I don't have a problem with that. That's wonderful. If that didn't happen, they would have to do it the old-fashioned way, and then that would have hurt, okay? So I'm glad they had that nice little anesthesia to put me out. Okay, so pharmaceuticals aren't in themselves bad. The misuse of them is. And you have to distinguish between that. So some of these people probably have a conscience, right? And they believe in what they're doing. They put their whole career into this. It's like Judy Mikovits. Dr. Mikovits believes in what she's doing. But it's the misuse, not the use of these things that's causing problems.
But I'd also like to say is with pharmaceuticals, when they do the studies or it comes out that more people are being harmed by it, they take them off the market. With the vaccine, they're not allowing the truth to come out about how horrible the vaccine as far as how many people have died. They said, I think something like 150 soccer players have died, like on the field died. And they asked other professional soccer players from around the world, how many in the past, before this, how many soccer players have you seen die on the field? Zero. Zero.
Yeah, soccer players are some of the healthiest in the world.
So wait until more athletes start dying. That'll probably start turning heads. Maybe that'll get people to realize that the vaccine isn't as safe and isn't doing what they say it's supposed to do. Because when you talk about athletes, they're usually some of the healthiest people because they're so conditioned. They're in the best shape of their life.
Mm-hmm. Unless their heart is swollen. And there are always weird cases where a freak accident, where a genetic defect. I remember there was a couple of high school students over the years that died. You know, 18, 19 years old, their hearts just, exploded, gave out. That happens, okay? But it's unbelievably rare, but it can happen.
Right.
So that's a different thing. So, but to all of a sudden have 150 soccer players. Now, soccer players, as I understood it, I was listening to something about this. The amount of aerobics that goes into playing soccer, because you're up and down a huge court, it's even greater than the basketball players, and they're running up and down constantly too. Of course, the football players only play 12 minutes a game, actually only about 6 minutes a game, when you think about it, because between all the huddles and the waiting times and the halftime and the quarter time and all that, and the offense and the defense, the average football player plays the time the ball is in motion in an NFL game is about 12 and a half minutes. Now, I remember that David Brinkley reported on that when he used to be a sportscaster. That's how he got his start, 50, 60 years ago. He's since passed on. But he talked about that. He said, and they can only film while the ball is in motion because they didn't have that much film. And they'd use about enough film for 12 and a half minutes.
Interesting.
So that's the only time that the ball was in motion in a football game. Well, how much aerobics are you going to use up in 12? And you look at soccer players, hell, they're running for a full game.
Right.
They're playing the whole time. They substitute people. Or like rugby players, same thing. You're probably going to see a lot of rugby players die because those folks are moving constantly too. Basketball players would be next in terms of aerobics. But even they substitute. You know, anyway, so let me just finish this one thing and then I'll let you get back to your next topic. So here it is. So this is from the White House, right? They actually said this, and this is what I can't believe, what you can't believe either. We are intent on not letting Omicron disrupt work and school for the vaccinated. For the vaccinated. One more time. For the vaccinated. You've done the right thing, and we will get you through this. So in other words, if you comply, we're going to help you. If you don't comply, illness and death. That's what they're saying. The good people will be helped. The bad people, we're going to let them die. I mean, you want to talk about segregation? This is a medical holocaust. You know, if they had their way, they would cause a medical holocaust. They'd be quite happy if all the unvaccinated simply dropped dead. I mean, that's what they're calling for. Is that not a medical holocaust? Is that not wishing evil and ill upon your fellow citizen that you're supposed to represent? Of course, we know he doesn't. He was installed. And then he says, for the unvaccinated, you know, in other words, the non-GMO altered, you're looking at a winter of severe illness and death for yourselves, your families, and the hospitals you may soon overwhelm. Bum, 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 bum. Bum, 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 bum. I shouldn't do that to Beethoven. I like Beethoven. But anyway, you get the idea. For the unvaccinated.
Then have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year anyway.
Happy, Happy New Year. You're all going to die. Happy, Happy New Year. You're all going to die. I need my laugh track. Anyway, what have we got here? This is Bloomberg. Oh, it says, after uttering that absolute tripe, he boldly and brazenly lied once again by claiming that if you're vaccinated and have your booster shot, then you're protected from severe illness and death, period. Well, no, you're not. And we know that's not true. We get to a little bit here. Yeah, this is still a DC Clothesline article. It says vaccinated Americans are catching COVID left and right, and many of them are dying. That's the whole reason the regime is now, that's what we're calling, it's the Biden regime. It's not an administration, it's a regime, right? That's the whole reason the regime is now shifting to saying everyone needs, quote, booster shots for the vaccines they were told were 95% effective. Well, if they're 95% effective, people wouldn't be dying from COVID left and right from the vaccine, but they are. Right. And he says that's the reason prestigious propaganda outlets like The Atlantic are writing articles saying we're now in a pandemic of the vaccinated.
Well,
and shilling illness boosters.
And someone needs to teach Biden, which that's like talking to the wind. But basically, COVID is non-discriminatory, regardless what he thinks. Don't matter if you're vaccinated or unvaccinated. You can get it and you can die from it. Doesn't matter. Crazy. But did you hear?
The vaccine gives it to you. The vaccine gives you COVID because it teaches your body to make the spike proteins, and the spike proteins are the dangerous part of COVID, not the virus itself. It's the spike proteins on top of the virus.
Exactly.
Yeah. Anyway,
that's
go ahead.
Scary. Mm-hmm. I was going to say, in New York, if you're looking for a job and you know how to treat people with cardiac arrest, go to the schools because now they're hiring people that are able to do that. Isn't that sad? Why are they doing that, Greg? I wonder.
Excuse me. Well, they're doing it because young men are dying in record numbers from heart attacks because they made them get the vaccine.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my God, it's so sad.
It's so preventable.
I can't fathom it.
Where are the parents? Pull your kids out of school. Get them out of this.
And you know what? Get your kids a pizza or a burger so they're not bribed from the school. I don't know where the place was last week. I mean, the place was in California. I think they bribed kids with pizza. And somewhere else they did with burgers. It could have been the same school district. But are you kidding me?
Yeah.
It's like, how sad.
Cynical.
Those guys should be fined. Whoever came up with that, all of them should be thrown out.
They should be in jail
for
drug inducing a minor. They were drugging a minor. That's what they were doing. You can't drug a minor. You know, I mean, if you sold drugs to a minor, if you sold them, heroin or something like that, you'd be in jail forever. What's the difference? You're bribing them with a pizza, making them get a vaccine.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter what the drug is. It's illegal to give kids a drug without their parents' permission. Anyway, but
now,
go ahead.
You can go on because then I want to ask you about something totally different than the...
Okay, good. Yeah. Well, I just want to finish this up. It says that's the reason that the Biden regime is working behind the scenes to shift their narrative from promising freedom from the virus to saying we must learn to live with the virus. and focus on severity instead of case numbers. So they're changing the narrative again because their old narrative didn't work. Ultra-vaxxed nations like South Korea are currently entering new lockdowns and seeing record deaths. Well, we've said this for what, a year, year and a half now? The more you lock down, the more you mask up, the more you vaccinate, the more people die. I mean, this is plainly right. Obvious to anybody who looks at it. I don't know what else to say. What's your question?
Right.
Oh, let me play a PSA. No, let me play our PSA, and then we'll start on a totally different subject. I haven't played these things for a while. I'm having fun. I like pushing buttons. Give me a chance to, you know, cough or do something when nobody's hearing. Okay, I'll be right back.
This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio. You've all heard those ads for people who have suffered medical or health tragedies, which say you may be entitled to compensation. But if you have suffered injuries or crippling diseases or medical procedures that went horribly wrong, it's not the compensation you need, it's the knowledge you should have had before the condition you suffer from now. So that you are never in that position in the future, I strongly recommend that you do not get any COVID vaccines. Get informed. Do your own research. For 99.97% of Americans, your natural immunity will give you, at worst, only moderate symptoms of COVID. If you've already had COVID, it's virtually impossible to get it again. There are effective cures for COVID, which will get you completely over the virus. There is no cure for the COVID-19 vaccines. Once you start down the road of DNA modification, there is no going back.
Okay, I got my Ricola now. I'm ready. What you got for me?
Okay, hold on a second.
Yeah.
Where do I want to go? I just want to make
so
one more.
Unseriously after my PSA. I mean, I really mean what I said in that PSA. Don't get the baby. Just don't.
You know, yeah.
Nobody who really knows about it recommend. I mean, so many other things you can do to boost your immune system and treat and cure the disease, you know, that's already here. You know, the vaccines are not the answer. They never were. Vaccines aren't treatment. And that's what Peter McCullough made really clear in the Rogan video. Sorry. All right, Gene, go ahead.
The sad thing is, for 18 to 45-year-old people, you know what the leading cause of death is for last year? They said it was drug overdoses.
Drug overdoses.
I mean, how sad is that to think? COVID times, and if you look at, it'll be interesting to see the number of people that died of drug overdoses and the number of people that died from suicide last year. The number, and then what trickles down after that. Yeah, horrible, horrible, horrible. But, you know, I want to now change subjects totally because there's so much going on with still last year's election, but yet we still hardly hear any of it in the news. But have you heard, and I don't understand how this could happen, the Secretary of State in Pennsylvania is trying, and I don't know if she put what she did, what they did, if they put a court order or something, but they want to, that person wants to stop the state Senate from presenting information looking at the Dominion voting system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they want to maintain the fraud.
Yeah.
She's part of the fraud. Yeah.
If you'll notice,
and the secretaries of state are the same people that were targeted, like the district attorneys. So George Soros on the left, the money people on the left, they put in district attorneys that were hopeless, you know, so that they could put as many criminals on the street, creating as much chaos and mayhem as possible. And that's how you get Daryl Brooks, you know, driving his SUV into a bunch of, people at a parade. Of course, the left, you know, doesn't talk about that anymore, but that's an act of racist terrorism. Okay, but he was let go the week or so before by a judge that gave him $1,000 bail for running over his, the mother of his kid. And so that's what we call preventable. If it was a gun situation, you know, they would have seized all his guns. All right, if it was a normal citizen, especially a white male,
or if it was a Trump supporter, they'd never get out of jail.
Exactly. Yeah, he'd still be in jail, right? But because he's a leftist black terrorist, you know, racist, it's okay. So district attorneys were targeted. Well, the other group that was targeted were the secretaries of state. Why? Because they control the elections. They make election rules and certification and things like that, and the governors go along with it. So it's easier to control one bureaucrat than it is to control an entire legislature. So that's why the bureaucrats are targeted. So that's why Raffensperger in Georgia and the Arizona Secretary of State and then the one in Pennsylvania, who I'm not familiar with, they can hold up the works. And their job is solely to keep the audits out as long as possible so that the time runs out before 2022, and so that the 2020 election isn't corrected. Now, we know that Biden's not president. We know that it's all a fraud. We know that he was basically installed by Mike Pence, who denied the Trump electors from the state legislatures. He was constitutionally bound. I don't know why his ass isn't in jail, right? He was constitutionally bound to certify those Trump electors, not the Biden electors from the Secretary of State. That's not how it works. The Constitution says the state legislatures, okay? And the state legislatures should have said, no, we're not going to accept this. Now they're taking too long to do it. So there's failures all over the place. I mean, there are some successes, like Wendy Rogers. But basically, the Secretaries of State are the deep state choke point. Just like Paul Ryan was the deep state choke point of the House when the House was Republican, Paul Ryan was the deep state choke point to make sure that nothing went through. The Secretaries of State are there to make sure that the fraud continues, that the state legislatures never have the ability to audit properly and to fix this before the 2022 midterms. That's their job. Make sense?
Right. How interesting. Yeah. I also heard last night that they're still auditing in California, and and they may decertify.
Oh, really?
That would be interesting. Very interesting. Yeah.
So what's the – see, now California's an interesting state because when I was there – people forget that, yes, it's a leftist state, but there's a whole lot of conservatives there, too, and the balance isn't as big as people might think. So the left controls the coastline. I mean, of course, the left always wants the beachfront property, right? So from Crescent City in the north all the way to San Diego in the south, it's pretty much liberal. And then you got a few places in the middle, Sacramento, various other places. But once you get to the middle of the state, and especially the north and the Sierras, it's very conservative. Devin Nunes, conservative Republican, is from Fresno. Fresno is a leading agriculture area. He's a farmer, okay? He's right off the land. He sees all the water. I used to listen to him 20 years ago when he talked about the water restrictions. I think he was a state representative at that point, talking about federal water restrictions on his farm, okay? So you go from Bakersfield in the south central part of California, where all the oil is, by the way. That's where I think a lot of the Strategic Petroleum Reserve down in Bakersfield, huge oil area. All the way up to, you don't think of California as producing oil, but produces a whole lot of oil, right?
The
environmental wackos have shut most of it down. So from Bakersfield up through Fresno, up through Redding in Northern California. Redding is like the bastion of conservatism. It's the biggest city in California that's really conservative. You know, a lot of conservatives from Redding to Bakersfield, and of course the whole foothills and the Sierras, Truckee, Tahoe, all those places. No, excuse me. Are all very Republican.
Right.
That's why I wanted to see the state split into three. I actually wrote an article in Canada Free Press about splitting California. But if you had, if you actually could separate the state, you know, split it down the middle, into, you know, or someplace, you know, have like coastal California and Eastern California, you'd have a Republican Eastern California, you'd have a leftist coastal California. I don't know. There's ways to do it. But anyway. There's a very strong conservative contingent in California. They're just not as strong as the leftists. That's why they lose.
Right, right. Yeah, well, that makes sense. And then, God, that's just, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Just crazy, crazy. And, Florida, did you hear that Florida's looking into election fraud as well?
Well, every state should do it. Every state should audit every election, every presidential and every midterm election should be audited. I mean, they really should. It's just that simple.
Right, right.
The other thing that should happen is
to think that the snowbirds are some of them may have voted twice. I mean, how sad is that?
Mm-hmm. Well, the solution is simple. In fact, I think I heard it the other day from either Wendy Rogers or somebody that everything. I think it was Wendy Rogers, who's a legislator in Arizona. Everything has to be done at the precinct level. Excuse me.
Yeah.
I gotta mute for a second. I'll be right back.
Yeah. So it's just crazy to think that we're 1 year plus out of the last election. I'll just talk for a minute.
You're fine. It doesn't take me long. I'm actually getting better. But, the more I talk, the more I'm going to cough. It's just a natural reaction. So I'll get through this and I'll stop talking for the rest of the day, which will greatly please my neighbors. All right. So what Wendy Rogers said, and I have some articles for you I think you're going to find interesting. What Wendy said is that everything has to be done at the precinct level. And so I'm extrapolating this down to a very, very simple formula. You know, counted where cast. Counted where cast. You know, the ballot should not move from where they're cast at the poll. They need to be counted at the poll. So this idea that you transport ballots to be counted at some central location, that's breaking the chain of custody. I don't care how secure it is. All right? You can mix things up at the table. They have to be counted where cast. They have to be counted when cast. So ballots should be counted
right.
where cast. They come in, you know, and then a ballot goes into a scanner or something, and that's it. It's counted. Counted immediately. Or counted, you know, to wait for people to leave so you don't know exactly which ballot's connected to who. You know, wait a couple hours, then count them. But once polls close, all ballots get counted in the precinct. They don't go anywhere. Ballots don't move anywhere. Those results are then sent in. Those ballots are then secured at the precinct. They don't go anywhere. So paper ballots.
But if they have more votes than registered people in that county
right.
or that location,
uh-huh.
then they should keep going over things until it equals out. Because there's no way that you should have more votes than people that were.
That happens when you start moving ballots around. The minute the ballots leave the place where they're cast, anything can happen. That's why mail voting is mail fraud. You know,
right.
if you vote by mail, that's a mail fraud election. So anytime a ballot, there's a separation between the voter and the counter. You know, you've got fraud. At least the potential for it. In many cases, there is fraud. So you can never mail ballots out. You can never mail ballots in. Now, those rare cases where somebody actually has an absentee ballot for a really good reason, certify it. Okay. Then you're going to match up that ballot with that person with a valid signature, and away you go. But you need proof of ID at the polls. I like Josie's idea, fingerprint ID. Fingerprint ID when you register, fingerprint ID when you vote. Okay. Let's make sure you are who you are. And with the fingerprint ID, they can check if you're voting anywhere else.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So
I like that. So
it's very, I mean, we've got the solutions. The problem is not the solutions. Action Radio has created the solutions. Josie wrote that bill. The problem is getting, you know, the people to do it. But you see,
they don't want it. Right.
They
exactly.
don't want it. Yeah. They want their current system. All right. When you're ready, I found a couple of articles I think you'll find fascinating.
Okay.
And so the title of the show today, Early COVID Articles, The Truth Was Always Out There. And so Gene and I had a big discussion the other day about the importance of the information that was out there. And I want to go over that again, but what I really want to go over is the fact that if you really want to know what's going on, you can't just listen to the news. You cannot just accept the news. You have to go find the news. I mean, you really have to do that. And it's not that tough because I got a bunch of articles here. I'm going to kind of start backwards a bit with some of the articles that I found that totally changed my view of what was going on. And it happened very early, like in January of 2020. I was already thinking, you know what, this is a crock of you-know-what. There's a bunch of BS going on here. Now, some of the articles, I'm surprised most of these articles are still here. Some of them were erased, and they've already been taken down, and I had to go find alternative sources, which I was able to do, in the case of one of these. But here's an article from 2008. Viruses, they're alive, and they can infect each other. Okay, this is Scientific American. This is not some you know, little half-assed journal. This is Scientific American, right? Nikhil Swaminathan, August 8th, 2008. Viruses are world champion parasites. Think of all the trouble they give us, from Ebola to HIV. Now French researchers have discovered a viral first, a virus that infects another virus. Okay, as soon as I read that, I knew that we weren't looking at all the places we could look, right? 2008 article, I found this in 2020, early 2020. I'm like, huh, okay. And this is where I started down this course of, well, wait a minute. If viruses can infect other viruses, why are we only focusing on vaccines? Here's a perfectly good Scientific American article. Let me go on. A virus that scientists are calling Sputnik was found in a newly discovered strain of so-called Mimi viruses. That's M-I-M-I. I thought it was Mini at first, but it's Mimi viruses, which is the world's largest known virus. Okay, virologist Jean-Michel Glaberi of France's National Center for Scientific Research and a team from the University of the Mediterranean in Marseille, that's going to be very familiar to you in a minute, happened upon the strain of Mimi virus swimming in the water of a Parisian cooling tower. Now, I'm assuming that's from a nuclear plant, all right? Anyway, it says when they peeked inside the viral particle, they discovered Sputnik, which consists of only 21 genes. They found that Mimi viruses infected with Sputnik are less effective at infecting amoebae, or that's like amoebas, but they call it amoebae, which is what they normally do. So viruses infect other viruses. Well, there's a whole branch of virology that's never mentioned in the news. Except on our show, because we talked about it, you know, back in January and February of 2020, because this is when I found this article, right? So we knew that this was all a bunch of crap, because, and especially when they only focused on vaccines, I thought, wait a minute, this is a marketing plan. Well, I hadn't quite formulated that yet. But think about this for a second. Here's more. The researchers believe that Sputnik is the first of yet-to-be-discovered family of viruses that they suspect may plague large viruses that attack ocean plankton. The French team reported their findings in the new issue of Nature out yesterday. I'll get to that next. The finding may answer a long-standing debate posed upon a 2004 cover of Scientific American, Are Viruses Alive? Bet you didn't hear that in the news either, right? It's a seemingly simple question, but actually not. On the one hand, viruses can copy themselves and affect the health and behavior of other organisms. That would be us. But they require the machinery of other organisms to do any of that. That's because they're parasites. Okay. But according to Claveri, if mimiviruses can both pirate another organism's DNA, copying machinery, and fall prey to another virus that does the same to it, then mimiviruses are most certainly alive. He says, there is no doubt this is a living organism, he told Nature News. That's Claveri. The fact that it can get sick makes it more alive. What do you think of that, Gene?
Oh, man. Yeah.
Okay. It's better. Got more for you. All right. So let's go to Nature magazine, which is the one that, this was taken from earlier. So Nature, and this is Nature, this is from 2008, August. Virophage suggests viruses are alive. Well, if they're alive, they can be killed. Well, if they can be killed, we don't need a vaccine. Okay? I mean, this is not huge leaps in intellectual capacity. This is pretty simple stuff. If it's alive, it dies. If it's alive, it can be killed. If it gets sick, it's most certainly alive. And if it can get sick, it can most certainly be killed. What's the big mystery here? Why wasn't that broadcast 24 hours a day? Because it didn't fit the narrative. It didn't fit the marketing plan. That's why. Gene?
Oh, gosh. Interesting. Very interesting. Yeah. Wow.
I got about 30 of these articles. We're going to spend most of the week on this. Right? I want to put this on the record of all the things. And I went over these 2 years ago. But we need to do it again, because I want to get people starting to not listen to the news, but start to find the news. Okay? And we'll do it here as much as I can, but I can't find everything. So if you find something, you want send it to us at Action Radio. Please feel free. Let me know. Call the show. Virophage. This is August 2008, Nature Magazine. Virophage suggests viruses are alive. Evidence of illness enhances case for life. The discovery of giant viruses, of a giant virus that falls ill through infection by another virus, fueling the debate about whether viruses are alive. See, the thing is, if you can do that, if you can, create a virus, because all this stuff's man-made, right? Coronavirus, the SARS-CoV-1, SARS-CoV-2 are man-made. Well, if you can make a virus, you can make a virus to kill the virus. Well, if you can make a virus to kill the virus, you don't need a vaccine. See, everything I was doing showed that we didn't need a vaccine. This is where all this went. This is where all this is leading from. This is why I've always been against vaccines from day one, where I never fell prey to the narrative. I already knew that we had alternatives. And if you have alternatives, then you're not going to fall prey to the narrative, because there are alternatives that they're not exploring. And not exploring the alternatives confirmed the narrative, confirmed that it was a fraud to me. Now, I tried screaming about this for years. I made videos. I made all kinds of stuff. But it's there. And I just look online. What kills viruses? Three words. There's more. So this is Jean-Michel Claveri once again. There is no doubt that this is a living organism. A virologist at the CNRSUPR Labs in Marseille, France. I am so sorry. Part of France's basic research agency. Now, Marseille is going to play a key part in this. He says the fact that it can get sick makes it more alive. All right. Giant viruses have been captivating virologists since 2003 when a team led by Claveri, and are you ready for this name? Didier Raoult, at the CNRSUMR, also in Marseille, all right, reported the discovery of the first monster. Okay, where's that name? Does that name sound familiar? Didier Raoult? Let's check your memory banks, Gene.
Yeah.
Do you know who he is?
I don't remember who he is, but I've heard his name enough.
Yeah. He's the one that released the study that chloroquine kills COVID. He's the one that Dr. Zelenko found, took his research, tried it himself on his patients, and they were cured of COVID. Although he used hydroxychloroquine, which is actually a better form of chloroquine. He then told the president, and you know how this works, all right? So from Didier Raoult to Dr. Zelenko here, to the president, to being demonized because they knew that a cure would stop their vaccines. Because under an emergency use authorization, if you already have approved drugs that are available, you can't get emergency use authorization. And they had to get an emergency use authorization in order to get their experimental vaccines on the market and into people's bodies.
Right.
Make sense? All roads lead to vaccines. Do you know who else said all roads lead to vaccines? I almost fell off the chair when I heard this. Peter McCullough in that video with Joe Rogan. He said all roads lead to vaccines. I almost fell off my chair. I said, damn. Where'd you get that line from, Peter? Because I've been saying that for a long time. It's really funny. So most of it was confirmed, too. I've been calling – well, I'm not trying to blow my own horn here again, but it's going to sound like that. But something else I find interesting, too, that it confirms what I was saying about GMO. You know what I call the vaccines RMA GMO shots? Judy Mikovits on a video just this morning I found, listening to it. She calls them GMO shots. It's hysterical. These people are all confirming, you know, this stuff here. It's fascinating. We're all on the same page. It's wild. All right. So Diderot, also Marseille, reported the discovery of the first monster. The virus had been all right. Vamp for a second. I'll be right back. Hang on.
So interesting that, all things lead back to vaccines.
All roads lead to vaccines. All right. So anyway, giant viruses have been captivating virologists. All right, I said that. Okay, I'm getting a little lost here. The virus had been isolated more than a decade earlier. See how far this stuff goes back? Earlier in the Mibay from a cooling. All right, that's the same information. The real reason I wanted to pull the second article up is because the connection with Didier wrote, the one that came up with the chloroquine diagnosis. There's more to this article here. But I'm going to hold off on this for a bit. All right. Did you have more? Because I got a few more things. I want to play our Santa Rosa Volunteers piece because once the crowd gets here, this is no time.
I have more stuff, but, you know, I'm kind of play your stuff because I think I want some positive stuff. All this stuff, I mean, not that it's negative, but it's it just kind of throws in my face what's going on in government. Sometimes you just need a break from it.
Okay. Well, check this out. This should explain a lot. And then let's do some positive stuff until Shelby gets here. Sound good?
Sounds good.
All right. I'll be back in a little bit. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents. Sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. There is no separation of church and state in the Constitution. Therefore, the Supreme Court can't imagine that it really is there, or should be there, so they can't create the rule out of thin air and then enforce it as if it actually did exist. The biggest problem with the controversy between Thomas Jefferson, then president, and the Danbury, Connecticut Baptists, a religious minority, is that everyone focuses on the answer by Thomas Jefferson, saying there is a wall of separation between church and state, but they never consider the request made by the Danbury Baptists that Jefferson sought to answer, and therefore where the wall of separation actually is. If you only have the answer, then you can make the question anything you want, including making the question fit the answer to advance an agenda or denying that there even is a question. The question now is whether the government is free from any of the moral constraints or persuasiveness of religion, such that religion and government are walled off in isolation from each other, so that government can contemplate and implement any power for themselves without any organized religious participation, debate, opinion, objection, or protest. That is a complete bastardization of the exchange between Jefferson and the Baptists, and it has been used to advance a bogus set of laws and court opinions. The background for this controversy comes from the article mentioned below, which says, "The First Amendment was meant as a limit on the National Congress only. Madison wanted limits on the states too, but they were rejected. State limitations on religious liberty and establishment persisted after the First Amendment was adopted. religious tests for office remained in place in most states. In Connecticut, 1818, and Massachusetts, in 1833, did not disestablish their official state churches until decades later. The Supreme Court reinforced the idea that the Bill of Rights did not apply to the states, but rather only to the national government in Barron v. Baltimore in 1833. Back to me. Where this becomes especially critical is when the states, not the state as in government in general, but the individual states, establish their own religion and churches because they were not subject yet to the First Amendment. It is in that context that Jefferson is responding to the Danbury Baptists. The key part of the Danbury Baptist letter to Jefferson is this clause. What religious privileges we enjoy as a minor part of the state, we enjoy as favors granted and not as inalienable rights. And these favors we receive at the expense of such degrading acknowledgments as are inconsistent with the rights of free men. The Danbury Baptists, being a religious minority in a larger group of Congregationalists, which was the state religion of Connecticut, were being discriminated against for not being part of the state religion. And because the First Amendment only referred to Congress making no law regarding the establishment of a government religion, but left the states free to do so, we had religious freedom at the federal level, but privilege and discrimination at the state level. That is why the Danbury Baptists wrote Jefferson. Now Jefferson's response makes sense. He says to the Baptists, "Believing with you that religion is a matter which lies solely between man and his God, that he owes account to none other for his faith or his worship, that the legitimate powers of government reach actions only and not opinions, I contemplate with sovereign reverence that act of the whole American people which declared that their legislature should make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, thus building a wall of separation between church and state." Put in modern English, the individual relationship between man and God is direct, and the wall of separation is so that the government never crosses that wall between individuals, their churches, and God, with state religions, state churches, religious laws and tests, religious qualifications for office, etc., etc. However, there is nothing in law or the Constitution preventing churches, religions, and religious individuals like pastors, priests, ministers, etc., and just regular folks too, from exercising moral persuasion, evaluation, and criticism over government, because the free exercise of religion also includes the redress of government for grievances. The wall of separation of which Jefferson spoke only works one way. To understand Jefferson and the Baptists, it's not the wall of separation between church and state, it's the wall of separation between the free exercise of religion and any state-established religion. That's it. Everything else is agenda-driven narrative. The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from selfeducatedamerican.com. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This episode also used Thomas Jefferson's misunderstood letter to the Danbury Baptists from the Washington, Jefferson, and Madison Institute website. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it.
Action Radio. Dangerously cool.
Okay, we're back, and before Shelby gets here, let's talk about some fun stuff. So what's fun for you? What you got in mind?
Well, nothing particular, except I wanted to bring up one thing about the 12 what were they? Missionaries that escaped Haiti?
I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, the people that they were over in Haiti, and I guess I don't know if they're back in the States now or not, but I was read something about that last night, and I mean, some of them were, I mean, one was an infant that they brought out of there, but my thinking is obviously the administration, the government had nothing to do with getting them out of there, or it would be all over the news, but I can't imagine being in a country like that, doing supposedly God's work, and then you get taken hostage, and it's like insane that, I mean, I don't even know how long they've been there. They haven't been there that long. I mean, they haven't been there as long as the people have been in Afghanistan, and I don't know what's going on with them, or if the government's doing anything to get them out, or if the government just thinks everybody's out of Afghanistan that wants to come out. But
no, it's like 500 people still there. They took out 100,000 goat herders with their 5-year-old wives, but they left behind Americans. Yeah. The Haiti situation is interesting. Haiti's been a dictatorship for a long time. It's an old French colony, Haiti. You know, and so it was run by Baby Doc and Papa Doc Duvalier. That was the ruling family, just like the Kim family in North Korea, Kim Jong Un and Kim Jong Il, his father, and then his grandfather Kim Jong something. Ugh. So these ruling families, you know, basically run these dictatorships. They're a dynasty, and they keep power by keeping everybody else, you know, dead. So that's how they do it. But Haiti is an interesting case study because Hillary was there. Hillary was there with an entire rescue, supposedly, after, I think, a hurricane or some kind of, you know, massive storm or an earthquake in Haiti. And, of course, you know, most of the money went to the Clinton Foundation. It never actually ended up in Haiti. So there's a lot of scandal with Haiti. Haiti would be an interesting thing to research if you ever want to do a special project on Haiti. That would be a place to kind of, you know, go over some history and let us know what's happening. But yeah, I'm not familiar with the 12, but if you follow up and you know, give more details on that, that'd be a good thing to do. Excuse me. Oh boy. Hopefully this is the last day of this. But I didn't get a chance to ask you. I forgot totally. Separation of church and state. Does my piece make sense to you? Does it explain it, where all this stuff comes from better?
Yes, it does. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, yeah, if you have questions, you can always, you know, ask me questions on these things. I try and, you know, I'm trying to keep them to 5 minutes, but then I read them and say, no, I have to have that. I took out like 3 minutes worth of stuff, and it's, no, it's too long. Oh, get rid of that. Okay, bye. So I'm trying to go on the Prager University 5-minute model, but it usually ends up being about 6. Okay, so I have a controversy that's going to be kind of fun for us to discuss here. I was thinking about the story I heard that Americans have ham as their traditional Christmas dinner. Now, being a Canadian,
really?
That's what I heard. Anyway, being
part of
the British Commonwealth, it's very clearly explained to me that there's an order to everything, you know, because British Commonwealth, proper Canadians do things a certain way, right? It's just the way the world is. So proper Canadians have turkey on Thanksgiving. They have goose at Christmas, as the British do, and they have ham at Easter. I mean, that's just the way the world is. So the appropriate meat for the season, turkey for Thanksgiving, a goose for Christmas, and ham for Easter. That's how it's supposed to be done. Apparently Americans, you know, being the independent people we are, do things our way. And I guess ham is a big Christmas dish. What do you do to your ham?
For Christmas?
Mm-hmm.
Neither, really. It kind of depends. Actually, this year it's going to be very
sushi?
Small
what?
Christmas, so we're going to actually have crab legs.
Ooh.
Yeah.
So what do you get crab legs in the Northwest? I'm in the North
central
of the country.
I know. Well, obviously not here. Obviously not here. But this is going to probably be me, my mom, and my brother and me, because my other siblings go elsewhere. And so quite a few years ago, my brother brought the crab legs. And obviously, yes, we don't get it fresh. But it was just nice, and I was talking to my mom last week and about, okay, what do you want? And she's like, she was going to do fish, and then we were talking about crab legs. So anyway, that's what we're going to do. The thing is, it's interesting you asked that, because last week I was asking people that I work with, patients, they said, what did you normally have for Christmas? And I got everything. But a lot of people actually said steak. But the interesting thing is, and I grew up on a farm, so a dairy farm. So, I mean, it's like we have ample access to beef. But interesting, though, that the meat, how more expensive it's gone up in the stores recently.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, Christmas prime rib is another big one, too. Yeah, I heard.
Right, right. And also the fact that another interesting fact is I just heard this yesterday is the non-meat, non-chicken, so it'd be like soy or whatever-based, alternative plant-based meat products or what they want to tout as meat products, nobody's buying it.
And of course not, because it's not real.
Right, so they have to figure out a way to get people to buy this food. Well, I don't even call it food when it's like, okay, when you put things together to make it chicken product or whatever they want to call it, but it's like, it's just interesting. So anyway, it was just interesting to hear how many people, what they had typically for their Christmas meal. And it's not like Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving, you're right, it's usually ham or turkey, okay? Mm-hmm. But for Christmas, it's almost like anything goes.
Yeah, Christmas is kind of variable. Well, see, it's interesting that I always think of Thanksgiving as the American holiday. Christmas is the Christian holiday, same with Easter. But Thanksgiving is universal American. And so anybody can celebrate Thanksgiving. It doesn't matter your religion, your background, your nationality, nobody cares. Thanksgiving is American. And so we all get turkeys. We all, we do the cranberry sauce and the whole bit. I still haven't understood stuffing. Seems to be a total waste, but that's okay. Anyway, so you've got
Christmas.
Yeah,
I don't mind stuffing depending on how it's made.
No,
but
I don't
want to
stuffing.
Eat it every day of the year either. You know,
I don't mind. No, I like stuffing. I used to, but the problem is this is like empty. It's like extra carbs I don't need. So I'm trying to cut down.
Yeah.
But if you look at Christians around the world, I mean, they're Christians in China, they're Christians in India, they're Christians in all kinds of places all over the world. They all have different traditions. There are Christians persecuted all over the world too. You know, you've got Christians in the Middle East, you've got Christians everywhere. So Christians celebrating Christmas have tons of different, Christians in Israel. I mean, what do they have, matzah? I don't know. You know, and so Christian traditions would, especially even in this country. I mean, how many Christian denominations do we have? You got Methodists, Congregationalists, Presbyterians, Baptists, Catholics, Unitarians, plus all the ones that they're making up, like, you know, Bob's Christian Church or whatever. You know, you've got a lot of different Christians here in this country. Episcopalians, do they all have different traditions? I mean, they all come from different places, and they're all here. Who knows what they all have? It'd be a great survey. Maybe there's an article. What do Christians have for Christmas, you know, based on religion? I mean, do the Congregationalists eat, chicken, and the Baptists eat, you know, goose? And I don't know. Goose is interesting. You don't see goose much in this country. I think a goose is more of a British thing, and so therefore it's more of a Canadian thing.
I think the Italians eat the seven fishes on Christmas Eve, correct?
The seven dishes?
Fishes.
I'm not sure. Fishes?
Yeah.
What fishes do the Italians eat?
I don't know, just seven fish. I used to go to my Italian friend's house for Christmas Eve, and they would have seven fish. It could be any type of seafood.
But you had seven of them?
Yeah, seven different kinds.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. Did that include shellfish? Count too?
Well, they did.
Okay, pompano, sole, swordfish, salmon, New England lobster, and Dungeness crab. Is that seven?
Yeah. Let me see.
And stone crab.
Okay, let me see. Typical fishes include salt cod, shellfish, eel, squid, conch.
Now you're into sushi.
Clam.
Those are sushi fish.
It's the Feast of the Seven Fishes, an Italian Christmas Eve tradition. Yeah, my friend didn't have conch, and I don't remember her having squid or clam, but she had seven fish.
See, this is what I wish Alan would call us. He's been busy the last few weeks, but Alan from Belize, because I think he calls it conch. It's interesting. Is this a conch or conch? It's two different pronunciations. But,
okay.
Same thing. Big shout.
Well, obviously, I'm not from there, so he's probably correct.
I call it conch because Alan calls it conch. Not that I know. I just, but you say conch, people know what you're talking about. Conch, people do. So it's, you know, are you expedient or are you, I don't know. So that's. I just wanted to throw that in there. But anyway, so, I mean, that's it'd be interesting to see what they have down there. It's probably plantains, conch. various seafoods and things like that. And you know, we should find out when he gets back on the show. We'll find out what a Belizean Christmas.
Yeah. This says here, why are there seven fishes on Christmas Eve? The ancient tradition of eating fish on Christmas Eve dates from the Roman Catholic custom of abstinence from meat and dairy products on the eve of certain holidays, including Christmas. So there you go. Hmm.
Well, I also heard that the Catholic Church was in the fish business, and that's where they put guilt on people. Everybody had to eat fish on Friday. So the Catholic Catholics would make profits. Sort of a modern precursor to our vaccination with Pfizer and the government. So, yeah, it's kind of interesting. It's, you know, governments and, you know, East India Tea Company in Britain, the British government. So, you know, they helped make the Indian colony. So, you know, all this stuff ties in. Anyway, back to food. Food's fascinating. And look at the great Jewish traditions at Christmas time. You know, sweet and sour pork, mushy beef, wontons. Sorry.
Yeah.
Great Jewish traditions. And the Jewish tradition is Chinese food, which the Chinese folks love. In Chinatown, it's hysterical. You see, I remember someone posted a thing on Facebook, a sign in a window. And it was talking about, we don't know why the Jewish people love our food at Christmas time, but we are happy to have you. You know, please come on in. So it's like, so the Chinese are, so Chinatown's great for, you want to meet a bunch of nice Jewish people. That's why I did my new normal church and grocery store.
Yeah.
I should play that. I don't know if Shelby's heard it. Shelby's on the line now. And so I can, in fact, just for the fun of it. All right. I'm going to play, let's get her on. Let me ask her first if she's heard. Otherwise I'll go right to her thing. Shelby, have you ever heard my new normal church and grocery store?
Your new normal, what?
Ever heard my piece on the new normal church and grocery store? You haven't heard it.
No, I did not.
Okay. I made this during the lockdowns. It was sort of my sarcastic approach to the fact that churches were closed, but big grocery stores were open. So I'm going to play this. I'm going to play your theme. And Gene, want to do some more positive stuff. So we're having a little bit of fun right now. We've done our serious stuff. And I'll be right back.
Okay.
Hello, America. Looks like millions of you are in states where the governor dictator has said that food is essential, but God is not. Fortunately, we have a solution for you. We've combined your essential food shopping with a non-essential religious experience. Being in the same building and being completely intertwined, you can't do one without the other. Welcome to the New Normal Church and Grocery Store. Yes, the New Normal Church and Grocery Store is the first business of its kind to bring God conveniently into your food shopping aisle. Think of this as food for your body and food for your soul. No social distance or group size restrictions here. Upon entering the New Normal Church and Grocery Store, you will pick up your shopping cart. You can then choose from an optional mask with a Star of David, a cross, a crescent moon, the sun for you Shintos, a statue of Buddha, and for you agnostics, a question mark. Headsets are available to play sermons throughout your shopping experience. Some of the favorites include, I'm Going to Heaven and You're Not, Die Infidel Die, Oi, What Not to Say During the Bris, and That Butterfly May Be Your Grandfather. To orient you to the store, the Kosher Jewish Deli is by the Western Wall. A simple shalom gets you service, but be prepared to haggle. For you Muslims, out of courtesy, we put the halal butcher by the Eastern Wall. Sharia store policies require the wearing of both a burqa and a mask, just to be safe. Protestants will find the Wonder Bread, hot dogs, and steak in the central aisles, where all the best-dressed customers can also be found. When you notice the smell of incense, you are nearing the Buddhist section, which is all vegetarian. For Catholics, communion is available in the bakery department by the wafers near the red wine section. Agnostics should go directly to customer service because you folks have no idea what you want anyway. Be sure to offer your confessional to the checker on the way out if you so choose. Please don't forget to first pull down the blind on the plexiglass screen. And if you require ministering, you can talk to your bagger as they push your groceries to your car because all our baggers are cross-trained in theology. The New Normal Church and Grocery Store, your combination alternative to the separation of church by the state.
Yeah, it's just some of the fun things we do around here when I'm bored and there's a lockdown. I get creative. So I had to play that for you.
Thank you. Thank you. That was very enlightening. It was interesting to see all your creativity come into play there. I found that very fascinating. Thank you.
Yeah, we don't just do news here, but I actually have a whole channel full of these. I'll give you my Christmas one later if you're interested. All right, let's get to you, your theme, and be right back.
Yeah, man. Como Shelby, to faraway places, wonderful beaches, exotic foods, meet new and fascinating people as Action Radio cruise and travel reporter Shelby Finette
takes you to where dreams become your reality and experiences become your best memories. Yeah, man. Here we go.
All right, let's find out what's going on with Christmas travel. Are the airports going to be backed up? Are the freeways crowded? Are we going to have gasoline? Is it going to be affordable? What's going on?
Well, I think this will probably be the least busy Christmas to travel in comparison to most, maybe not in comparison to last year. But definitely people are traveling again. I do not think it'll be anywhere near the amount of travel that you're used to seeing in yesteryears, because there are people that are still not traveling. But I do think that there'll be an excess of travel. I usually tell people traveling this time of year, it's always the most expensive time of year to travel. However, prices are still pretty low for most travel, just because the pandemic has, they're just trying to give people as many opportunities as possible, and they're just getting their feet back. But I keep telling people, remember, it's when it comes, just like gas prices are rising, travel is going to get astronomical because there's a real need to make up for big losses. So that's definitely coming.
But if the price too high, they'll price themselves out of the market if they try and recoup their losses too fast, because that'll actually slow down travel. If they start really raising the prices too fast. Wouldn't it?
It really depends on where we are with COVID. I don't think it's a money issue. There's enough people that have money that as long as they felt safe, they would probably pay just about anything to travel. But I don't think it's an issue. It's just the feeling safe part that people are not there yet. There's still such a huge divide, and you have to be vaccinated pretty much to travel most places. Mexico, you still don't have to be vaccinated. And it's probably one of the easiest places for U.S. people to travel back and forth from. Currently, the new rule is that you have to have a test within 24 hours or within a day of travel. So that's like a new thing. or proof that you've recovered from COVID within the last 90 days. So that's another option for people.
Okay.
Instead of.
Time to drive across America. Yes, the open road, the great stretch, the sunset from your car. It's time to take that private transportation all across the USA. Just my thought. So private jets.
It's definitely, well,
are people taking private jets?
Private jets. That sounds good. I like the idea.
With all the hassles and the masks and the social stuff at the airports and the rules and the restrictions and the security checks and everything else like that, especially if it's really crowded, are more people that can afford it? Because you said there's people out there with money. Are more and more people either chartering jets, finding alternative transportation, getting together, pooling, there's like fractional jet ownership where people, the company doesn't have to buy a jet. They just kind of rent one for a while. Is there more private jet travel, given what the airlines are going through?
Right. I haven't got those kind of stats. We don't really deal with private jets. It's very good question, though. And it's possible. It's definitely possible. I mean, when I say people have money, that's a different tier of people that have money to have a private jet. But, that's a small pool. But I would suspect they're out there, that's for sure. It's not something.
Well, like I say, to rent them, or are there small companies forming, for example, that use?
Yeah, they definitely
private
have
jets.
Them. I have not had any interaction. I've seen some promotions, but have not actually heard from anyone, and that I know that's utilized them. And honestly, I feel like I would have, because the promotions, if they were honest with their promotions, were so inexpensive that someone would have done it by now. But it must be some sort of a side markup deal that prevents a lot of people from doing it.
Yeah, if it's too cheap, it's not real. Airplanes are expensive.
Yeah, exactly.
If it's too cheap, there's a problem. Yeah, exactly. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Especially if you can fly. But yeah, it's something to look into. And people are traveling for the holidays, just I don't think it quite as much. I don't know that they're going to put any restrictions on us in Florida.
I don't think so.
So that's good. But it's coming. People are traveling, just not that many, some. What other Christmas questions do you have?
Well, I got a question. Yeah, if I drop out suddenly, it's because I still have a cold, and I'm trying to mute myself before I cough rather than get into the microphone, you know, or at least duck aside a little bit. Yeah, yeah. But I don't know if you have any numbers, like compared to either percentages. I mean, how many people are traveling this year versus how many people traveled, say, 2 years ago before we even heard of COVID? I mean, it was millions of people. And Thanksgiving, too, was huge.
That's something I have to research. But at the top of my head, I mean, if it's before COVID, I mean, I would say, you know, from what we saw in the cruise industry and the halt on travel, I mean, it was definitely down 10 to 20% of the normal travel. You know, it's still, we're not anywhere near. We might be 40% at the cruises and probably a little higher everywhere else. But it's, you know, it's nowhere near capacity. Or, I mean, the ships aren't even in the water. You know, resorts are
they still building them?
Definitely not.
Or is that halted? They're just not out. Okay.
They are still building cruise ships, but not at any rapid rate, and they just don't have all of their. They haven't engaged all of their ships in each company. They've only got, I'd say, they're running probably at 50%. And resorts, local hotels seem like they're doing pretty well. They're not. I don't think it's completely full capacity, but probably will be this weekend.
Okay.
And for the holidays in general, but certainly not cruise ships. And I just don't think they're doing as much international travel just because of the headaches of it all.
Yeah.
Because you really do have to know your rules everywhere you go. It's not very simplistic at all.
Yeah, it's not fun. I mean, travel's supposed to be fun. You got to put the fun back in it. You know, I remember way back when PSA, it was California airline. I mean, they had stewardesses instead of flight attendants. This is how far back this goes, right? And they're all wearing hot pants. They look great. It was sort of like Hooters of the air. Okay, and so it was fun, you know, because that's what you had, you know, it was very stereotypical. You had the stereotypical business guys and the hot flight attendants, but it worked. I mean, the airline made a fortune, you know, but that's when people would travel for business before we had Zoom and computers and everything else like that. You had to travel for business because personal meetings were where it was at, and so that was a different world. Of course, fuel, the price of jet fuel was like, you know, a fraction of what it is today, so that makes a difference too, but it's just interesting how things have changed. Now you have more and more people flying, but you also have more and more incidents of people behaving like they're, you know, in a wrestling match. You got some real violence up there. You got some really crazy people, whereas it used to be more civilized, you know, probably because it was upper middle class, people could afford to fly. It was a more civil situation. Now you've got like, barroom ethics, you know, on some of these airplanes. Is that being looked at?
Well, yeah, but there's also a lot of tension because there weren't as many rules. They've got right after 9/11. I mean, that's going to say not get fun.
Yeah.
It's just so many rules. You're being constantly peppered within inconsistent demands, and it does get to your core of even your child core. Like, enough already with the rules. You know, there's rules for rules that don't make sense. I mean, they don't make sense, and a lot of them are not followed. And just to begin with, you know, even just 9/11, having three ounces now and then of things in a certain bottle in a 1-quart bag, it's bizarre because it's like, listen, if someone wants to blow the place up, they can do so with those magical numbers as well. So that doesn't.
And they're not going to put things
really
in shoes because everybody's checking shoes. But one person puts something in their shoe, they're still checking, what, 12 years later? Still check everybody's
right,
shoes?
Right, exactly. Yeah.
They're not going to do that. They're going to pick something else that they're not checking. I mean, that's what terrorists
do. Right, exactly.
So that's where you should be looking.
It's impossible to keep up with the ideas of a terrorist. You know, it's just getting to the point where it's getting too specific. And then, of course, you know, you have airlines that don't follow any regulations, really. You know, the only thing they won't let you do is take your water bottle, which again is a bizarre thing because most people really are thirsty while flying. And
well, you're dehydrated. Just, you know, you're at 8,000 foot altitude. The air is thinner. The moisture is less. That's why the alcohol hits you so hard. You've got less oxygen. You're more dehydrated. You know, that's why people's feet swell up and all kinds of things. You should drink lots of fluids, non-alcoholic fluids, and don't wear a mask. You know. And use the air vent, you know, above your head. You know, breathe, get some fresh oxygen blowing on your face. That's why those vents are there. And people don't use those things. They don't take advantage of it. I think they should always be on. Well, here's a question for you, too. Do you use the vent when you fly? Do you use the vent overhead, that little cone-shaped thing?
I'm mostly very cold, and airplanes are very cold for me, and I get sick when I'm cold. So they say that that's not true, but I can tell you from my own 40-some-odd years, I'm confident. I know I get cold, I get sick. So I try not to stay cold. So I don't use the vents most of the time unless it's unusually hot, but that's not something that I've ever really been a part of, and it hasn't seemed to affect me either way. But because it's still, it is recycled still, you know, the air is, I don't know. I don't find that planes are the safest place to be with any with any sickness whatsoever. I've never thought that they were super safe.
Well, kind of just taking the risk. Germ factories, yeah. But I found something interesting, too. There was I've reported on this before. There was a device that actually detects COVID, you know, and they can put them on airplanes. And so if there's COVID in the air, you know, then you might want to put a mask on. But if you've got a pretty COVID-free environment, why would you, you know, have to wear a mask? I mean, it's just a thought. But the others, they don't think about that.
No. You know what I find interesting? A lot of my friends that are really on one side that don't want the mask mandates actually like the fact that they are putting masks on in planes because of just the close proximity and all that. So that's kind of interesting. Another just mental protection. I find the whole thing to be ridiculous as far as masks go. I'm definitely on the side of it'd be one thing if everybody kept them on, but they don't. They all take them off to eat and drink, so that it's all useless. So
which is when you're most likely going to. Yeah. Here's the weird thing, though. COVID's transferred airborne for the most part. It's transferred in an aerosol for the most part. Aerosols go through masks, you know, because the particles of an aerosol they're actually evaporated particles. I mean, they're tiny, tiny, you know, it's like they say a mosquito flying through a garage door is about the equivalent of a virus going through a mask. I mean, they're so much smaller than the mask. And the fact that you're that close, but if someone sneezes, you know, in aisle, you know, 112, way in the back there of your Airbus 380, right, it's going to be in first class within about, what, a minute, maybe two. You know, since it gets in the air circulating system because it circulates, you know, same thing, too, in the office building. Someone sneezes on the first floor, it's on the 10th floor in a few minutes. Why? Because they're circulating.
Right.
Well,
the air filters are taking care of a lot of that because they have new air filters. So I don't know the science on it, but they've definitely mentioned that the air filters are cleansing the air to a high degree.
But your immune system takes care of it. That's the crazy part. The point I was making was that your immune system on an airplane will take care of most of the COVID problems, just like it does in an office or it does on a public transportation or any closed service. An eclipse environment. I think Jean wants to get in here a bit. Jean, did you want to say something?
No, I had a question before, but then I forgot it, so that's okay.
write down your question.
So Jean, you're sick too.
Okay.
I feel like you both sound sick.
Yeah, my allergies have really kicked in today. I don't know why, but everything's frozen here. Yeah. I have a question. If you could pick a place to go now, where would you go, and why? And I don't mean what's your favorite place. What I mean is one that doesn't have the COVID hysteria. You know, so you go there and not, you know, like New York would not be my favorite place to go because of how they're clamping down. So where would, you know, so a place you go to get away and just, you know, rejuvenate and not be stressed out because, you know, just of restrictions.
Yeah, that's so definitely Mexico for me. We've traveled to Mexico several times during COVID, it's been super easy, and it's like a whole different world. It's kind of hilarious, really, or shocking. I'm not sure which one, depends on who you are. But it's, you know, the resorts we've gone to, all the workers still have to wear masks, and I always feel bad about that. But, if you know, hopefully they want to. I have no idea. But the workers have to wear masks. But no one else has to, and it's just like the old days. I mean, they have like certain implementations that could be seen as helpful, really for anything, meaning like there's no buffet, you have to serve, there's someone to serve you the food. So not so many paws touching all the forks and the tongs, which I really think is actually very helpful for a lot of things. But besides that, it's just business as usual, and nothing has changed, and there is nobody's talking about COVID, and I think the U.S. population that's traveling to Mexico, for the most part, is more on the mindset of I'm not worried, I'm not getting the vaccine, and I don't believe that this is a problem for me. So you have a whole, like, the cultural belief system, you know, they're there. And 37 million people have been have traveled as a tourist to Mexico the last 2 years in a row, about the same 37 million
wow.
during COVID. But prior to that, it was like 90-something million a year. So it's still only a third, but that's still a lot of people. And I think you, like I said, you also get the type of people, for the most part, that are just not even about COVID. So they don't, they're not looking for a fight. They're not looking, they're maskless. They don't have any interest. The majority are in the same cultural belief, I think, as a lot of people are, that don't believe that this is a real problem for them personally, and they're not worried about it, and they just kind of want to move forward. So that it's been the easiest place. It's also very easy to travel there because you don't need anything. And now you just need a COVID test to go back. And as I mentioned in my previous talks, that they just do it right at the resorts. And honestly, I haven't heard of anybody that's been quarantined just to the couple resorts I've been. I'm sure it's happened, but I don't know of any. And I thought it's pretty interesting that when I asked one of the workers, I said, well, isn't that interesting that no one's got COVID when it's like a pandemic and you're testing all these people? And his response was, we don't sell positive tests. So I don't know if that what that leans
that's
towards,
like Russia. Our planes don't clash in Russia. We don't have problems.
Yeah.
There are no gay people in Russia. It does not exist.
Oh, boy. Anyway.
Yeah, we know how that goes.
I find Mexico to be the most reasonable when it comes to COVID and its protocols and its thought process and its implementation. But yet they're still doing the main basic things, which is keeping their staff having masks and have a lot of hand sanitizers. And, the silver lining to all this is that finally bathrooms are clean everywhere you go, even
on
airplanes.
That's not a bad thing. But if they're outside wearing a mask, it's kind of silly. airborne viruses are in enclosed environments. That's where they work best, in enclosed, warm environments like a home, a nice warm hotel lobby or something like that, or an office building. That's where the thing is. Anyway, how about countries like Africa and India, where so much of the population is taking, preventatives for malaria? Excuse me. Whoa. I got a cold. I had a moderately intrusive medical procedure last week. Not a procedure, a check. And fortunately, I'm fine, but I think I picked up a cold from the hospital. Anyway, so that's why I'm weak now. But I was fine like a week, couple of weeks ago. So I'll get this knocked out in a couple of days. But like I say, countries where they take ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine for malaria have very low COVID rates. Are those countries more accepting of travelers with fewer regulations?
No. No, and I really, I don't advise anyone that's not very well-traveled and very flexible to be traveling that far away, because they're changing the rules so constantly. During COVID, we had a couple of people we know that were literally stuck in Colombia for, I think it was like 4 or 5 months. They could not get out.
Wow.
It was really intense. And
why can they get out? If you have a disease... Why would a country want to keep you if you've got a disease they don't want? Do they want to get rid of you?
I can't remember exactly. I'm not going to speak to the exact specifics. I just know that they could not leave.
Curious.
There was no flights. There was no flights out, and all the flights kept getting canceled. I mean, it was. I don't know. I'm not conservative, but I'm not a risk taker either. And it just there's just too much movement. So cruises, when people are vaccinated, I think cruises are fine. They're doing everything that they need to do, and I don't think they're going to be locking down cruise ships anymore like they did in the very beginning when they didn't really know what to do. However, I do think for the non-vaccinated, Mexico is the easiest, safest, most reasonable place to go, whether you're vaccinated or unvaccinated. As long as you're not at risk.
Yeah. See, it's funny you said that, because I am conservative and I do take risks. It's part of what makes life fun for me, even talking about this stuff. Cruise ships, they made some really big cruise ships before COVID. Do the cruise companies regret making these 5,000 passenger superliners? Did they have more plan? Are they just kind of holding them until things improve and we get beyond this? Or what, do you know anything about their strategy with these things? Those are big ships. I've never been on one. You've been on a few of them, right? The really big ones?
I have, yeah. I've been on a few there that have 6,000 passengers. I can tell you that just recently a Royal Caribbean ship had 6,000 people, including the crew. So pretty big ship, not totally full. Yeah. So when it's a totally full ship, it's 9,000, right? Because you got 6,000 passengers and 3,000 crew, something like that. And this ship had 6,000, and they just had a sort of a breakout of 45 people that tested positive for COVID, and 95% of their passengers were vaccinated, because there are some children that they allow on without vaccination still. On Royal Caribbean,
yeah, but they're not susceptible anyway. They got the greatest immunity there is. So letting the kids come on is not a big deal.
Yeah, but I think that what they're trying to say is that it's probably likely that they were able to transmit it, have the virus and transmit it, and then 48 people. Most of them were either mild or asymptomatic, and they didn't tell us which vaccinated and which unvaccinated were positive, but that did happen, which I haven't seen that happen on any of the cruise ships that have 100% vaccinated on it, and they also test before they get on board. That's definitely hit the news anyway, so we'll see what happens there. But they didn't lock down the ship or stop people from disembarking. They did disembark a few people that were sick a bit earlier than their last port, but it didn't seem to affect the majority of the guests. So again, as I tell everybody, like, they have to really be understanding that there's no such thing as a zero, they can't be zero tolerance for this if you want to move forward at all, because it's a virus and it moves faster than you do.
Well, they still have norovirus people get. They still have just regular infections. People still get colds. You know, if you're on a deck of a ship and all of a sudden it's like, you know, it gets really cold. I take an Alaska cruise especially, you're expecting summertime, and all of a sudden it's like 52 degrees out there. You know, you might get a cold, you know, which is mostly being tired and stuff like that too, but it combines with it. But cold plus, tired, you know, which is what you get on travel, you can get sick. So there's still all the regular things people get too, but we don't stop the cruises for them. This is the crazy part of this. You know, it just seems to be very strange.
It's
this one thing.
And to me, it's not that crazy, considering that people that have never died from the flu, that were seemed relatively healthy,
right,
and have not died from a cold, are dying from COVID. Not a ton of them, but some of them. And that's enough to stop people from wanting to take the risk. I mean, it's not a comparable. I don't like comparing this to a virus like that's a cold or a flu, because even in that respect, like, of course people are more scared. That makes sense. That's a reasonable fear when you know someone has died of something that you don't believe they should have because they were relatively healthy. Then you're going to be nervous of that. So, I think that's why they're not treating it the same as a cold, because it's not the same as a cold, because
it's closer to a flu. Of course, then the question is, I don't want to get too personal if it's somebody you know personally, but the question is, was the treatment stay home until you get really sick, then get on remdesivir, and then get on a ventilator? Because if that's the treatment, that's the one that's not working.
We agree on this fact that it's really suspicious that the government has stopped really allowing anybody to even promote the hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin that seems to have appeared to have worked for many people, not all, but many people. And
why
not
try
it?
Did you get a chance to see that video that I sent you, the three-hour one on Joe Rogan and Peter McCullough?
We're working on a big travel agent sales funnel, so
watch it.
We've been very busy, but I did watch the first couple minutes of it.
Yeah.
And it was interesting to hear that the couple hydroxychloroquine, manufacturing companies had mysteriously been burnt to the ground.
Yeah, what a surprise. Yeah.
Oh, so sad. It makes my stomach so sick. But it's just, so we're in agreement with the fact that these, for whatever reason, should have always been allowed at least to try them, and I think
because they're already approved. That's the crazy part. They're already approved. Both of them have been approved for 50, 60 years.
It's so suspect. And this is, again, what's very suspicious about the censoring of information
Yep.
Is that anyone that says otherwise is claimed to be some sort of a horrible person and spreading misinformation, which really may not be true and isn't showing us that it's misinformation. Will it work for everyone? Apparently not. But, hey, some people believe that it's worked for them, and doctors have studies showing actual data that it has worked for them. And this should be something that's tried. And it's cheap and it's approved and it's so suspicious and it's so sad at the same time. That these interventions aren't working or aren't being implemented at a regular pace. So that to me is very sad. And also, like I mentioned, I went to Mexico the other couple months back, and this was an interesting port, a very small port we were in, which was kind of the pharmacy that we went to was kind of inside the port terminal, almost like the way it was designed. And for cruise ship passengers, like, this wasn't regular Mexico pharmacies. There were pharmacies inside a mall type of thing, right?
Right.
And they didn't even have hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin to sell, whereas they just were like, nope, we don't do that. And I found that, again, very suspicious because it was like, wow, they're not even allowing these people to sell it. And then, of course, the FDA's – or was it the FDA's quippy – sarcastic tweet, which I find sarcasm to be very useless. I don't like it, and I don't enjoy it, especially in topics that are very important. Personally, it's not my flavor. However, the FDA is making sarcastic comments about ivermectin. That's horrible. Like, sarcasm saying you're not a horse, don't take this. Well, this is so misleading and so off point for an agency such as them to be being sarcastic, putting down people, and acting as if there isn't a human. I haven't used ivermectin personally, but I know people who have and have sworn that it's helped them. Mm-hmm. And it's...
Well, there's a human.
It's in human use. There is some for horses, but there's also some for humans. And it's just bizarrely suspicious to me that people are... we're at the point where FDA is making sarcastic quips on a tweet, trying to make people feel bad about something that isn't, in misleading them completely, acting as if ivermectin is not something made for humans as well. So these things are very suspicious. And
if you're asking, you know, it cuts into vaccines. That's the problem.
Yeah. Too. You don't know. I mean, it's.
Oh,
you know, it's just,
yeah, I do.
I'm not going to make.
I just got to hold you up for a second because we've got Josie. I want to bring her into the conversation. And don't go away, Shelby. We'll get right to you.
She started off as a poor child in Nicaragua, living under communism. And now she is a prosperous small businesswoman with a great family, living the dream as an American citizen. Josie Cossey knows all about both worlds, communism and freedom. She knows where your dreams can come alive and where they can die very quickly. And so her report is as much from experience as knowledge, and her passion and crusade are very real. With connections all over Central and South America, Josie brings you the world south of the U.S. border from personal experience, living, not just reporting, what's happening. And now, the Latina Report with Josie Cossey.
Yeah, it's our Crazy Tuesday as we keep bouncing around. Josie, welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, I love my freedom.
Good morning.
I'm going to fight for my freedom in this country, let me tell you. Anyway, how are you today? Good? You're not feeling good?
I got a cold. I think I picked it up from last week's rather interesting intrusive event at the hospital. But at least I got the knowledge that I'm fine, you know, as far as the check went. But I got picked up a bug. But anyway, there's some big conference going on. Do you know anything about this conference in Phoenix? Is it Point USA or America First or something like that? Whatever it is, I should probably be.
No,
there,
I don't.
Okay. Well, I'll definitely still
working
on feedback.
Yeah, that would be good if you're there. There's a lot of top name conservatives there.
Yeah. I'm wondering, though, I'm going to see what happens to CPAC. I'd like to be invited to speak at some of these things as opposed to just go there and wander, you know, wander the halls. But I'm still working on CPAC to their chief person that does the booking for the media row and the workshops. I mean, because I really want to teach a workshop. So no progress on the
CPAC.
I still have to get
Orlando?
The top person. Yeah, it's in Orlando. I'm going anyway. I mean, this one I am going to.
Okay.
Hopefully as many of you can join me as possible. But
I
we'll see what
go.
Happens. We'll go. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm driving. Yeah, I guess. But
okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I might have like 3. All
right.
We'll see what as he wants to go, but yeah. Yeah, we're heading out. Yeah. Anyway, so what's going on in your world? What's happening?
I was checking around a little bit, trying to figure out how many countries are vaccinated. I was concentrated on Portugal. About 85% of the people are vaccinated in Portugal.
Huh.
And at Lisbon, the city of the capital, which I've been there, I spent about a month in Portugal traveling in buses and trains to see the whole country.
Mm-hmm.
So they're requiring the passport in order to do anything.
Right.
And then I went all the way back to Peru, and 62% of the people in Peru are vaccinated, and but people are not getting the booster. About 6.6% only have the booster so far in Peru.
That's interesting. Now, is that because?
Yeah.
What is it because of? Let me leave it more open ended. Why do you think that is?
I guess they're finding out about it now that they got all the vaccines. But one of my best friends, she's a doctor in Peru. We dance together Zumba when she comes to visit.
Uh-huh.
She's 100% for the vaccine, and she stopped talking to me for a year and a half because of that. And it's so stupid. A lot of people, I don't know, they want to fight about it, and they think you're crazy about talking like that. And I'm like, we got the evidence. People are dying, you know.
Yeah,
my family members have died. I mean, me personally.
I got the Facebook post, no one regrets not getting the vaccine. And I've never been a single person that regrets not getting it. It's going to be interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And in Colombia, they're requiring the vaccine-proof passport now for restaurants, for clinics, for any activities you're doing.
So
people wearing the mask outside. It is.
So how did so much of the world... How much of the world, so much of the world, do you think got caught up in this? Like, why? I mean, you know, these are independent countries in Central America and South America, you know, like Portugal and Europe. You know, so many countries, are they all being bullied by Pfizer? Is it the World Health Organization? Because the vaccine rates that 85% for a first shot at least seems fairly consistent. You know, from Israel, throughout Europe, throughout Central South America, except the African countries who are already taking ivermectin and hydroxychloroine, so they're pretty much immune anyway.
Mm-hmm.
India too. India. That's why I asked Shelby about traveling to India and Africa. Why do you think this feud, and I can ask Shelby this too, but why do you think these governments are all complying so universally, so equally? Is it corporate pressure, government pressure, money, corruption? They actually believe this stuff. What do you think is going on?
I think, first of all, for years and years, the world followed the United States, first of all. And it's been like that for a long time. They believe and they've been trusting America with their health care and different advice. We're the world leaders in the world. If the United States falls, all the other countries will fall. But anyway, they follow. But now with this corruption of the tests and vaccines and masks and all the shields and plastic and business and everything, China is behind 100% with Bill Gates. And I believe the presidents, leaders in all those countries are going to pay very well, very well.
Okay.
And that's what's happening. The corruption, it's 100% in all those countries.
Are they using our taxpayer money?
Huh?
Are they using our taxpayer money or are they using their own country's taxpayer money? In other words, are these countries taking taxpayer
money? I believe China is pumping millions of dollars, Bill Gates, George Soros, Hollywood, a lot of these people, and some of it's coming from our taxes. But I think the main money is coming from China to blackmail all these countries. That's what
they're doing. Pfizer does it too. Pfizer spends tons of money lobbying.
Yeah.
And they've got billions of dollars, billions, like multiple, like tens of billions of dollars from the products they've sold, which are not approved, by the way. They're still using the experimental ones. The approved ones haven't been made yet. So you've got an unapproved, you know, so-called vaccine out there. It's people think it's approved, but it's really not. So that's a lie. You got Pfizer with lobbying money up the wazoo to force any country. I know they're arm twisting around the world. You got the WHO, which is in on it. It's big government pharma. It's a definition of fascism. It's a corporate government merging over a single product. And if you listen to our show, and this is Shelby Taylor, you want to get into this, and Gene as well. Well, Gene was with me for 2 hours. For 2 hours yesterday, we went over totalitarianism from a couple of videos from the Academy of Ideas and the video with Joe Rogan and Dr. Peter McCullough and the steps that totalitarian governments use. It includes the suppression of information, the taking away of things that you used to enjoy, total isolation. And then the last component is a singular solution brought to you by someone in authority. Of course, that'd be Dr. Fascist and the vaccine. Mm-hmm. And so these are all the stages of totalitarianism. And of course, the answer to it, well, not of course, but the answer to that is a lot of what we're doing here, which is getting the truth out, ridiculing those in power. And apparently I learned something something called the parallel structure. And that's what Action Radio is. So a parallel structure is something that's outside the tyranny but operates within it in a similar vein. In other words, you have Congress, which is totally corrupt, but we have a citizen legislature as a parallel structure. And what Václav Havel, the one that came up with this, was saying, he was the one that defeated Ceausescu in Czechoslovakia, if I know, or was it Romania.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, no, this I'm going to give my place to choose. Anyway, Václav Havel, just let me finish this real quick, but Václav Havel, you know, came to power. He was talking about, you know, parallel structures, things that we're doing, things that other people are doing, America's frontline doctors, are more effective than political action. The political direct action is easily defeated because that's what, you know, look what happened on January 6th. But the parallel structures, the things that are in place within the totalitarian, you know, society, are much more effective at convincing people and changing things. So we're on the right track here. If history follows, you know, if what I learned just in the last little bit about this follows true, then we're doing some good work with a parallel structure, a parallel legislature to the ones that aren't working. Just a thought.
What I was going to say is I'm just wondering what kind of vaccine Portugal is using, because 85% of their people are vaccinated. And I'm going to try to get more information in Peru with some of my friends that live in Peru or Chile.
Yeah.
If they know what's the percentage of people dying, because our country is the most infected with COVID out of the whole world here. So I believe it's done on purpose. So the vaccine is probably done on purpose too, that why people are dying in the United States. I have a friend right now, she had a stroke from the vaccine, a mini stroke, and now she's having horrible headaches. And she's having heart condition too. And about three people in my Sunday school class already collapsed with heart attacks from the vaccine. And blood clots in her leg, the lady that had the stroke, and she's taking ivermectin now. So I don't know if the vaccine, like, remember I was talking about in Nicaragua, everybody's traveling to go to Honduras to get the vaccines. From the United States, the Pfizer. And I'm like, oh, no, please don't do that. Because in Nicaragua, they're giving the vaccine from Russia and Cuba. So I don't know how different those vaccines are, or if they know that our vaccines are deadly and theirs are not. I don't know. You know, it's hard to tell right now, but I'm going to try to find out at least from Peru, because I have close friend in Chile also.
Yeah.
this is deadly. In America, what they're doing, and a lot of nurses are telling me there's a lot of miscarriage. A lot of people are having miscarriage after the vaccines, and it's so stupid.
It's funny. The young men are having myocarditis, and the young women are losing their babies. I mean, it's a horrible situation.
And some of the
it's preventable too.
Some of the people that I personally know that we help with COVID, guide them after, you know, having COVID, and we kind of guide them where to get the medicines and all that. And now she says she was bullied at work and she took the medicine. Now she's pregnant, so I don't know what's going to happen with that. So it's pretty sad. Still, a lot of the illegals are coming in our country by the thousands every day, and they're not being required to get vaccinated. And they're coming out with a lot of type of disease, a lot of these people. But governor from Texas taking action. He's building a wall. I think he got about 54 million donations already from U.S. citizens to start working on this wall. And I think it's awesome what they're doing. And he says if anybody wants to help with donations, to go to borderwall.texas.gov. He encouraged a lot of Americans to help them. And you know, a lot of the materials that we taxpayer pay when Donald Trump bought all the materials to build a wall, the cartels in Mexico stole a lot of the materials. They're a bunch of crook thieves, nothing new. So they have stolen all the materials.
So Biden surrendered that too. So he surrenders to the Taliban. Mm-hmm. He surrenders to the cartels. Yeah, that's pretty sad.
Yeah.
Well, what do you think of this doom and gloom speech we're going to get tonight? You know, they'll help the vaccinated people, but those of us that are DNA healthy, they're gonna just let us die in the streets. We're all gonna be, you know, we're gonna be plagued. We're the plague out there. This is the healthy people with the plague, and the vaccine injured are the ones that they're saving. It's such a I've never heard, and Gene was pointing this out earlier. We've never heard president. Of course, he's not president. We've never heard anybody in the White House. Let's put it that way. Say something this, I guess, demonic and this separatist. You know, just dividing America. I mean, you talk about talking about segregation. I mean, there's no greater segregation right now than what they're calling the vaccinated and the unvaccinated. I don't like the word un because it implies this is something we should do. So it's the vaccinated and the healthy, as far as I'm concerned. You know, in fact,
they want to vaccinate the healthy.
Yeah, I don't want a GMO shot. These things are, as Judy Mikovits, I found a video, said that these are genetically modified organisms. Well, why would I, if I'm not going to eat GMO food, why the hell would I want a GMO shot? That makes no sense. We lost Shelby, by the way. She's gone for a while. So I was hoping to get her comment on this, but I missed the I'm Shelby, you're fabulous. So that's okay. We'll
but
get it next
you know,
time.
This
yeah, go ahead.
Government's been trying to, they've been trying to kill us for years, you know, with all the food, the vaccines. Most of our children have all these issues after they get all the little vaccines from their babies. You know, they've been doing this evil for so long and they've been getting away. And you know, it's time to stop these people. And I'm so upset that nobody's doing anything to stop this vaccine.
Well, they're trying to.
More innocent people are dying.
I mean, a lot of people are trying to, but, you know, how far do they get? You know, the people that know are not being recognized. You've got an illegal government represented, you know, who's gone to an illegal Dr. Fascist to bring about illegal policies that they're requiring illegally. None of that stuff should be happening. Yeah, that's what's happening. Let me say something I found. I've got a bunch of, you know, this week I'm pulling out all my old articles from early 2020.
March of last year.
And before. Now, here's one that you're going to find fascinating. This is Judy Williman, PhD, Vaccination Decisions. This is an article from Australia. This is from 2020. I'm not sure exactly when. It says vaccines did not control infectious diseases. Part of it's about what's happening in Australia. This is where it gets interesting. Vaccines did not control infectious diseases. Infectious diseases in Australia were controlled by 1950. Only diphtheria vaccine was in use at this time, and this was involuntary vaccination campaigns. It also resulted in the Bundaberg tragedy that killed 12 children in 1928. That's interesting. Measles, whooping cough, and influenza were removed from the national notifiable disease list in 1950 because the deaths and serious illness to these diseases had been significantly reduced for the majority of children. In other words, the diseases were still present in Australia, but in the majority of cases, they produced mild or asymptomatic infections that resulted in long-term immunity and good community protection, natural herd immunity. This is 2020, all right? So I found this fascinating.
Yeah.
They said no vaccines were used for these diseases in 1950, and the measles vaccine wasn't introduced into voluntary vaccination campaigns in Australia until 1969. So why am I talking about Australia? Well, because Australia is a total lockdown. They've got gulags of people that refuse the COVID shot, and rightly, you know, and those people are refusing rightly so. But this is how bad it is. But this is what they used to know. So in Australia, not only did they not have, you know, all these vaccines for kids, they knew that they didn't need them. This is why I found this so fascinating. It's one of those articles in my long list of, you know, the information was there. You just had to look for it a little bit. All right. So I already talked about that. They said this means that the incidence of measles was not monitored from 1950 to 1970 because the majority of cases were non-serious cases that resulted in good community protection. So in other words, natural immunity. You get the infection. It's like asymptomatic COVID. Okay, millions upon millions of people have had COVID in this country and never knew it. You know, we've all been exposed. I got another article. I'll get to it tomorrow on how there was a briefing of Congress. Everybody was exposed to this several times over. You know, in early 2020, we've all been exposed. Well, who got sick?
And,
the vulnerable.
And
yeah,
Judy and Dr. Judy Mikovits, she was telling us that Anthony Fauci, the criminal, he spiked all the flu shots in the United States in 2019. And so everybody that got the flu shot will have COVID eventually. But you know, Greg, what I found out right now is a lot of people that I know that already have COVID, they're kind of like sick again. So one of the nurses was telling me that she has the Delta COVID now. So how can she tell the difference?
Well, I think Delta's pretty much gone, but, you know, maybe it's still around. Maybe it's still around. See, now I've got like a garden variety cold. I don't have a fever. I did a little bit yesterday. But, you know, the usual, sniffles, head cold. This is a standard cold.
Yeah.
This is not COVID.
Of course.
I know what it is. I've had these before, you know. It's a, you know, you get an infectious environment like a hospital with a lot of people, and, you know, you can get infections. You know, that happened. This is actually fairly normal.
You're fine.
And I'll be fine in a few days. Yeah, I'm going to go get some. I need to get some more, you know, quercetin, vitamin C, vitamin D. I'm sort of running low on supply. All right, let me get more of this article. I think you're going to find this really interesting. It says the deaths and illnesses from infectious diseases were reduced for the majority of children by the 1950s, 1960s, and the outbreaks were less virulent because of the changes to environmental and lifestyle conditions that had occurred by this time. So what happened 1950s, 1960s? We're talking post-World War II. Okay, consumer economy, more money, better healthcare, better lifestyle than the pre-World War II folks were living. Says that, back to the article, says that is public health reforms have been implemented that reduce the risks from these infections. Each disease needs to be assessed separately in the context of the environmental conditions at the time to determine the risk from these infectious agents. This is also the case for the polio outbreaks in the 1950s. The risks and benefits of using a vaccine for each disease must be considered separately because of the specific nature of the infectious agents, the environment, and the host characteristics. Okay? Changes to the criteria used to diagnose polio in the 1960s also needs to be considered in the decline of the disease. That's also interesting. So here it says, today, we have an overcrowded vaccination schedule, and the combined schedule has never been tested for safety in infants and children by comparing vaccinated to unvaccinated children using a true inert placebo. There was one thing, I want to skip down a little bit because it's something that, here we go. In 1966, public health officials stated that until social and economic changes are made, no amount of medical and scientific knowledge can be of much help. There's one, I'm looking for one particular section. It was talking about, well, basically what it said was that the biggest reduce, oh, here we go. Comments by Australia's Commonwealth Director of Health, who is it here? And Australia's Nobel Laureate for Immunology, McFarlane Burnett, there's a good name. Good eye. McFarlane Burnett said, clearly stated that public health reforms such as, here we go, sanitation, hygiene, nutrition, and smaller family sizes from 1850 to 1950 were the most important factors in reducing the deaths and illness due to infectious diseases. Therefore, the government is incorrect to suggest that high participation rates in all vaccination programs are necessary to prevent deaths and illnesses from returning as a public health problem. What do you think?
Pretty good. And you know, Greg, thinking about it, if these people are so concerned about us dying from COVID and all that, how come they didn't give us a guideline what to do, how to help your family, how to avoid, how to do this? All they care was to put the mask on, lock yourself up in the house, or if you test the positive, go home and give it to the rest of the people instead of giving you some meds. You know, these people are criminal, and if they're so worried about death, how come we're not closing the border? Because a lot of the drugs coming in are coming through the border, and the cartels are getting rich. They're making $14 million per week, and a lot of
I'm surprised the cartels aren't in the vaccine business. I'm surprised they're not, you know, getting money from Pfizer to vaccinate the illegals before they come across the border. Well, maybe that's next.
No, Gene, they're not doing that.
Sorry, Jessica. I just find it so hypocritical that we all are supposed to get the vaccine, and it's going to be a horrendous year for the unvaccinated. We're just all going to die and be sickly. Yet the people coming from Mexico, no, they don't have to have a vaccine. That's okay. Come on through. Yep. You're all right.
Yep.
Hypocrites. This whole, right. I don't even want to say administration, the whole corrupt Washington is just a bunch of
Think about this too. The greatest cure for infectious diseases is sanitation, hygiene, good sewers, fresh water, you know, nutrition, And good information. I mean, where's the remember Pueblo, Colorado? For more information, remember the government used to do PSAs on all kinds of stuff, and they give you information. And for more information, write the government printing office in Pueblo, Colorado. You don't see those anymore.
Yeah.
There was no.
Yeah, I remember that.
Where's the PSA on boosting your immunity? I mean, where's the PSA on any of that? Well, maybe I'll do one.
The southern border is a petri dish of COVID and illness.
Ooh, good analogy.
Because they have none of that. I mean, if you consider that people, kids included, are crammed in like sardines, don't tell me they have good water to wash themselves, wash their hands, and all that. No.
Well, now, so you've got to remember that the government wants to spread COVID so they can sell vaccines. So bringing the illegal aliens with COVID and giving them as much as COVID as possible on the way, it's all part of, remember, it's all part of the Great Replacement. You know, Americans get vaccines, you know, abortions, restrictions. You know, we lose our businesses, our money's taken, our fortunes are taken, we get drug overdoses. Illegal aliens get free transportation, free money, you know, hotels. Welcome to the United States, free citizenship. I mean, it's a great replacement. You know,
but
just one last point.
Great.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to say, but how can they tell us we need to get vaccinated and we need to do our patriotic duty when they're allowing people over the border? They don't even have to be tested for COVID and they don't even care if they have COVID or not. And they don't need to be vaccinated. So where's their patriotic? I guess they don't need patriotic duty.
Yeah. Now, I think it was Harry Truman that said patriotism is the last refuge of the scoundrel. Anybody that invokes patriotism, you know, you got to be suspicious of. Anyway,
right away with the thief and cheek and office.
Let me tell you quickly before Paulette comes on.
Okay. Well, you can still stay.
Some of my friends at church, they're upset because some of their college kids got vaccinated and they go, oh, this is my Christian duty, Mom. And two of her boys just got vaccinated a couple months ago, and she's very upset about this. And that's what the kids told them. This is my Christian duty to get vaccinated. Give me a
really
break.
God talked to them and said, "This is you have to get vaccinated." That's interesting.
Stupid.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, but look at the.
But you know, they believe what they're told.
Yeah. Well, actually, the colleges are like 97% of the students have received the GMO shot.
Yep.
Just one last thing on polio before I bring on Paulette. The same thing with that Australian article, which when they realized that by the 1960s you didn't need vaccinations, polio was stopped by chlorine in the swimming pools and good sewers. It's a fecal-borne bacteria. That's what polio is. And as soon as they started chlorinating the swimming pools, you know, people stopped swimming in the little swimming holes and lakes, and they made much better sewer systems, which they did. It's, you know, sanitation, hygiene, nutrition. You know, and again, they said smaller families, you know, because in the bigger families, a lot of times, you know, they had bigger families because kids were dying. You know, and so you had to have a big family just to ensure that, you know, some of the family would continue on. It's a very different world we live in now. Anyway, let's bring on Paulette and see what she thinks about this, and then we shall continue on. Paulette, you want to add to our conversation here?
Hello, darling. Hola, chica, ¿cómo estás?
Good morning,
Susan. Yeah, of course. I mean, you know, our greatest medicine is food, you know, food for your medicine, but people don't really realize that. And I don't know if you saw the New York governor. She said that now the definition of vaccinated is not just somebody that's had the first shot, but they need to have every booster after that. And then in addition to that, she's requiring that. And in addition to that, she also says that they still need to wear masks and socially distance. What I don't understand is how...
How do people
not see how crazy that sounds? It just doesn't even, I mean, like, just on its face, just the prima facie of the issue, can you not see how crazy that is? I mean, I don't know.
Mass psychosis. Listen to the first 2 hours of yesterday's show. We spent a lot of time going over how the implausible becomes plausible, how through fear, things that you would never believe as a rational human being, people are scared into believing. It's a fascinating process. You know, psychosis is where one person is crazy. Mass psychosis is where damn near everybody's crazy. And the problem is that the normal people, us, you know, look crazy to everybody else because we're the minority, but we're actually the ones who know what's going on. We're the ones who actually have our sense about us, and it's up to us to stand strong and be firm in the face of this paranoid craziness brought about by mass psychosis. Go to Academy of Ideas. Check out the videos there. Check out the ones I posted. Check out the information there. Check out yesterday's show. We spent a lot of time going over, you know, how to prevent it and what are the causes of it. It's right there. So, yeah, mass psychosis is the answer to your question.
Yes. All right. Yes, I, that's awesome. Yes, absolutely. Well, what I want to know is Santa vaccinated?
Good question. Very good question. So that means, thank you. You just ruined a lot of kids' Christmas because Santa can't come if he's not vaccinated, huh?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah,
Santa got run over by Dr. Fauci on his way to Christmas at your house.
So here is a little secret that I'm letting out only to your radio guests. I have a very special guest coming on my show this evening, and it may just be Santa. And so I think on this show we are going to have a chit chat about what is naughty and what is nice, and does that include vaccinations? So, you know, I might just get to talk to the man myself this evening. Okay, if you watch my show, that's the secret, but don't tell everybody because it's only on this radio show that I'm actually giving you that hint tonight. So tonight we're making all kinds of naughty and nice food, mainly nice food, and we're going to talk about how some of the food that I'm making on my show can actually enhance and boost your immunity, which, by
the way, let's hear about them. You know me, I'm a big food person.
Yeah, I actually have a friend who was so sweet yesterday. He was dying to try my bourbon balls, and I said, "Well, I'll trade you that."
This is a family show, Paulette.
Yeah, hold on. But I said, "I'll trade you some for your turmeric tea." So he makes this turmeric tea with honey, turmeric, ginger, and he infuses it. And, oh, let me just tell you, it's got some zip. But he drinks that every diet for building up your immunity. Of course, you know, he's, you know, been able to overcome, like I have, the crazy virus without having to get vaccinated because he also
vaccine's not treatment. Vaccine won't cure. If you've got COVID, a vaccine's not going to do nothing for you. Probably going to make it worse. If you already got COVID, introducing more COVID is not a good thing.
Yeah.
But here's a question. Something I've always wondered, Paulette. If you have something like turmeric, and we hear these things boost your immune system, right? So what is it about turmeric? What does it do in your body? You don't have to be a biochemist to answer this, but I'm just kind of curious. Just basic knowledge. Does it get into your bloodstream? Does it activate certain, you know, enzymes, hormones? Does it trigger organs to produce more of whatever they produce? What actually do these things do to boost your immune system? Do you have any knowledge of that?
Well, you know, that's a fascinating question, and you always ask scientific questions to a non-scientific person, but I would love to know the answer myself. But
okay.
I do know that it works, and that actually the funny part about it is, I don't know if you have any Indian, you know, friends as in, you know, from India. But a lot of Indian cultures put turmeric in a lot of their food. And
this is the main ingredient in curry powder. I love my curry powder,
course,
which I put in all kinds of things because it's
absolutely
mostly turmeric.
Yes.
We have a good time in India. Thank you very much. Okay, bye. Go ahead.
And, you know, it's funny that you should...
My apologies to India.
No. Well, you know, this is so funny because... this whole month I've been doing, like each week I've been kind of focusing on a different culture. Like I did Latino 1 week, I did Italian 1 week, I did German 1 week. But I think it would be fascinating. I've never actually done this before, but I would really like to kind of do the naughty and nice, like which culture is it that is the healthiest? And actually, you know, they've actually done those studies. And I think there's one, you know, that is like an Asian culture, and they've really studied, like, you know, what was it about them that, you know, then of course, you know, there's the Mediterranean, but there's actually, they've narrowed it down to like, I think two or three places in the whole world where people live. They have the most centenarians, anyway, the people over that live over
100 years old. Yeah.
Yes, centenarians, exactly. Of course, what do they eat? Lots of fish, lots of high fatty fish. and you know, and olives, and you know.
Yeah, fats. We should do more fats. If you want to take some time, if you have some time during the week to research the questions that I'm asking, I mean, I'd really, you know, I don't expect an answer like right now. You don't have to have a biochemistry degree, and I don't expect to be able to answer these questions, but it'd be worth looking into. Is that, what is
Absolutely.
That connection? What is that thing in your body that is triggered by these spices? And it's interesting, the spice trade. Yeah, go ahead, Jane.
I do have a question about turmeric when you guys are done there.
Okay. Well, it's always interesting that the spice trade went on for years. You know, the East India Tea Company, I mean, spices came out of Asia. Spices were hugely important in European cooking they have been for hundreds of years. I don't even think they knew why they're important. India's had, you know, turmeric and curry powder forever. You know, so, excuse me, you know, but these things are very critical. And I think people were doing things that they didn't realize how good they were. Chicken soup, you know, it actually does cure you of a lot of things. I should go out and get some, you know, but I mean, these things are there. But like I say, I'm always curious as to how exactly, what does it trigger? What does it do? But the value of these ingredients, you know, these various spices and things that, you know, has been huge and has been known for a long time. So actually it's interesting that when the trade routes were set up, you know, thousands of years ago, one of the first things they traded was spice. Guess what? You live longer. You're happier. You're healthier. It's fascinating. I find it fascinating. Paulette?
Yes. Yes, no, I want to hear Jean's question about turmeric.
Okay.
No, I just had a question about using it. So, like, if you put turmeric in your tea, are you supposed to use pepper with it? And if so, what does the pepper do?
Oh, you know, that's a great question, because actually the turmeric tea that he made, he did use pepper. I personally find cayenne is my favorite. Like, that's like my magic ingredient. But I, you know, and it's really interesting the way that pepper will, you know, make you sneeze. But yeah, some people, I don't know if pepper somehow activates the turmeric or what, but yes, definitely. I have noticed that people do like to, or do use the pepper in that tea. So you're spot on to bring up the tea. I mean, it's really, you know, an interesting thing. There's something about the spices too,
Well, here's another question too, though. But if hot tea, in fact, I was talking to somebody about natural honey the other day, and they were saying that, cause I put it in my, you know, my tea, and we both, you know, we're talking about the fact that the extra heat might actually cause problems, because one of the problems with unnatural honey is that it's been cooked. And so you ruin a lot of the enzymes and natural things that are normally there. So turmeric, if you put turmeric in tea, is the tea going to be too hot that it might actually ruin some of the effects? Now, I don't like turmeric by itself because it doesn't really taste like anything. Turmeric by itself is boring. That's why I put it in curry powder. So I'll buy my curry powder. I've got my whatever it's called, something. I love those spice bottles. Those are the coolest ones. You know the ones I mean? With the green tops. Old glass bottles,
yeah.
Right? Yeah, okay. McCormick's. There we go. So I got my McCormick spices. So I put turmeric on everything. Eggs. Turmeric's great on scrambled eggs. You know, it's great on, I put it in my salmon salad. Throw some turmeric, you know, throw some curry powder on that. I mean, curry powder, you can put it on just about anything, really. And especially if it's a colder dish, you're still going to get the full nutrition. I'm not sure if you put something in hot tea that the actual heat will do something to it. Paulette, do you have any insight on that? What do you think?
No, I don't, but I do have to say, I am very impressed with the things that you eat for a bachelor.
She's done it again, folks. She opened the door. I was waiting. Bachelor, after all,
you know,
I'm only a man. Let's,
you know,
talk about this for a second.
I just have to kind of, you know, just jab you like that. But, you know, here's the truth. I mean,
well, you know what's
going to
happen.
You're
going
to
get
it
right back.
What I'm about to say is not scientific in any way, but
no,
this is a general observation that, but what I'm seeing, and I mean, this is just me, the trend actually nowadays, most men I know cook a lot more than most women that I know. Most women I know do not cook. I mean, this is just me.
Most of the great chefs are men. Why is that?
Whoa, now you really got me.
Okay,
you know,
name women chefs other than Julia Child. Go ahead, name some.
Okay, yeah, absolutely. It's funny that you – no, I do want to say this real quick before I go into that. One of my very, very close friends, Soya Casey, she actually is in Gulf Free. She's actually a great chef. She actually went to culinary school with Julia Child, by the way, and she said that actually Julia Child was not exactly the greatest chef, but she had the personality. And a lot of the so-called celebrity chefs, you know what I mean, are actually, it's their personality. And, you know, it's funny because, you know, when I used to teach, you know, culinary arts, you have all these, you know, kids coming in and, I mean, you know, they want to be these celebrity chefs who are not necessarily, you know, chefs, you know, at all, you know, but, you know, just to give you, you know, a few examples, I mean, there's Alice Waters. I mean, she's
that's true. Yeah, she's fabulous. Yep.
Yeah. I mean,
Chez Panisse, you know, out in Berkeley. Yeah, it's like $150 just to walk in the door. Yeah, it was a little out of my price range, but I'd love to go back there. And it's like a year. I think you have to make reservations about a year ahead of time for Chez Panisse.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
You know, I mean, and the, I mean, there's other people that are not, you know, as known. I mean, there's Tracy Desjardins. There's, you know, I mean, Elizabeth Terry, which you may not, you know, even know of. I mean, there's a lot of people.
Paul, you do realize I was needling you as you were needling me. You don't have to name a whole bunch of women chefs.
Well, you know.
That was not part of this exercise. I want to get back to what you were talking about, that for a bachelor, I tend to eat rather well. What, are most men idiots about nutrition or what?
I don't know that they're idiots. I mean, and I'm not speaking
kind
scientifically. I'm not speaking scientifically. But again, as a general rule, many men don't seem to be as concerned or health conscientious as a lot of women. Of course, this is a general observation, and there's nothing scientific to it. I'm certainly not.
How old are these guys? How old are the guys you're talking about?
Mostly the guys that I'm talking. Well, I'll tell you, there's two kinds of guys. There's some like my son, who's in his 20s. And my son has become fascinated with cooking. I mean, and I don't think it has anything to do with his mom because the kid's a physicist. You know, but all
actually, that makes a lot of sense. There's a lot of physics
now,
in cooking.
And he's not, the kid is not overly concerned about health because he just, but he gets a lot of little girlfriends that are vegan and all that kind of stuff. So he's, you know, so he's conscientious. Sometimes he's always texting me and asking me, you know, for recipes like, Mom, how did you do your, you know, vegan shepherd's pie, you know, whatever. But, and so, I mean, he's conscientious to that degree, but, you know, a lot of, you know, young people, even older guys or whatever, you know, because, I mean, there's people my age, 40s and 50s, but I have a lot of guys who reach out to me, you know, for my cooking show, like, oh, how did you do this? How did you do that? And they all cook. But a lot of the women that I know that are my age are like, you know, where can we pick something up?
You know? That's really interesting. Yeah. But I think guys always like to cook. I don't think I've never thought of cooking as a sex discriminatory or as a woman's thing. You know, and the reason I said a lot of, you know, the great chefs, most of the great chefs are men. I was half joking, but this is, you know, they are great chefs. And anybody can be a great chef.
Well, part of it is that women were never taken seriously in the first place. And I can tell you that. Yeah, and I can tell you that just from my own personal experience again, and this is in the you know, late 90s when I graduated from culinary school and I went to work in a restaurant. Women were not taken seriously at all. I mean, it'd be like, oh, you're a woman. Okay,
unless you owned the restaurant.
We'll let you do this, but not that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
like
people talk over you. I mean, there's a great deal of sexism pretty much in all industries, like, you know.
Well, there's a lot
like,
of that with new people. You know, if you go to a newspaper, you don't write the feature stories day one. You know, you end up being an editor. You're a copy editor. You know, if you go to any business, if you go to a fine restaurant, you don't start off as head chef. You start off probably washing dishes. If you pick any industry you think of, you're going to be an apprentice for a while. You're going to learn on the job. You're going to, you know, you don't start in the army as a general. You know, I mean, everybody works their way up if you're going to be really good at your profession.
I mean,
so that makes sense.
Of course, that's true, but I'm telling you, for many, many, many years, women were not taken seriously and not even allowed into the profession, you know, at that level.
So that doesn't make any sense, though, because cooking's not a, it's not a, there's no, you know, gender specific thing that you know, there's those like strength requirement for cooking. There's none of the things that you might think of that could possibly, you know, there's not a, you know, there's no part of your brain that has the cooking gene in it. Excuse me. You know, so it doesn't make sense to sexism. But what I was getting at with the age was that, you know, is it, I would think older men would have more nutritional interest simply because older people do, because you have to take better care of yourself. Whereas in your 20s, it doesn't matter so much.
Yeah,
that's kind of what I was getting to.
Well, I would agree with you like 100% because a lot of men, their doctors will wind up telling them, hey, you need to lose weight or, mm-hmm. you know, hey, if you don't lose weight, you're getting ready to have a heart attack and die. So, yeah, you would think that that would make sense. But I still think a lot of men are very stubborn and, you know, oh, yeah, I'm fine. It's, you know, I mean,
a lot of women aren't stubborn.
It's really hard
Trust
to believe
me,
that
them.
They're stubborn and full of pride, but, you know. The Bible says that pride is the root of all evil. And really, if you even look back to, like, the vaccination, all this kind of stuff, when people mm-hmm. get convinced in their mind that something is right, even to admit that perhaps they're not right or they may be wrong about a certain thing, is very difficult just for the ego alone.
Hmm.
But it is what it is.
Once people, you know, embark on a course of action, they don't want to look like they're retracting from it. You know, if they get the vaccine and they get deathly ill, they don't want to go back and especially after bragging about getting the vaccine for, you know, or talking about getting the vaccine, and then all of a sudden they get deathly ill from it. They're not going to come back and say, the vaccine made me deathly ill. I was wrong. Most people are going to hide that. Excuse me.
Right.
Anyway, but I would think people, this is why I like having you on to talk about nutrition, especially, is because people need to learn more about it. You know, food is medicine. Food is exercise. Food is all kinds of things. Food is culture. You know, there's so many things that go into food. And the fact that Indians discovered turmeric way back when, I mean, how would they know? I mean, before you had studies and measurable things and computer analysis and things like that, how do these people know that these spices made their lives better? I just find that interesting.
It is. I agree. Absolutely. You know, and I think even if you go back to like, you know, a lot of the biblical foods that are talked about, you know, with the honey and, you know, pomegranates and olives and, you know, all of that, you know, so a lot of, you know, and I mean, if you really look at, you know, one of the healthiest diets they talk about is the Mediterranean diet. And of course, you know, most of the foods talked about in the Bible are, you know, Mediterranean. There's something in the Bible about like French fries or Chick-fil-A sandwiches. But we're going to have a lot of fun tonight on the show. I'm having a Grinch theme tonight. So it's kind of like a hors d'oeuvres party food made healthy. So you'll definitely be able to get to see some fun, you know, Christmas specials, things to you know, make quickly if people are coming over, but things that, you know, you can kind of keep on hand as a staple, but I'm going to kind of give you some twists on, you know, how to make them look prettier or yummier or whatever.
Okay.
I'm excited.
Hey, I got a question. Gene and I were having a debate earlier about what are the Christmas meals, and being a British Commonwealth person originally from Canada, it was turkey at Thanksgiving, ham at Easter, and goose at Christmas. So of the three, turkey, ham, and goose, where do they stack up nutritionally? What's better for you of those three? Which is our healthiest holiday, if we stick to that particular thing?
Well, you know, ham or turkey, I would say where did the ham or the turkey come from would probably be the biggest question. But yeah, that does seem to be the tradition. But a lot of people do beef for Christmas, like beef Wellington or things like that. Or if you're crazy like me in my family, we have Chinese food on Christmas night. So, I know it's a little weird, but... But, you know,
oh, no, most of the Jewish population of this country goes out for Chinese food Christmas Eve. I know, because in Chinatown, the signs were on the door. We like to thank the Jewish people for your patronage during Christmas Eve. We're not sure why you like our food on that day, but we're happy. You know, it's great.
Probably, I mean, it may be because they're the only places that are open.
No, it's not. There's plenty of places open. In San Francisco, you can get Brazilian food on Christmas Eve. But, Well, that's why I have, just for the fun of it, I haven't played this for a while. We got Chancey on the line now too. So I'm going to play my Christmas greetings, which I made last year, but it still is appropriate this year. So we'll take a couple minutes and be right back.
Awesome.
Hello, everyone. It's that time of year again. So here is just a friendly little message from your Action Radio revolutionaries. In preparation for Christmas and New Year's, we have just a few ideas and suggestions to make your holiday complete. Granted, these are times of adversity brought about by bureaucrats in what we affectionately call the leftist lockdown orgasmic power trip. But don't let a completely illegal, martial law style,
abdication and removal of your constitutional rights get in the way of a decent glass of eggnog with friends. After all, 6-foot social distancing is a completely false concept for a virus that can linger in the air for hours in aerosol form, can be sneezed well over 200 feet, can travel through an entire 10-story building central air system in a couple of minutes, and goes through a mask like a mosquito through a chain-link fence. So, no matter what you do, everyone is getting exposed sometime. Leaving the healthy people alone accomplishes this in about 10 weeks. So, this should have been done the end of May. Speaking of masks, besides being a violation of your Fourth Amendment rights against seizure of your person, in this case, your face, without due process, the state can't make you wear a mask. So, go home if you're sick, but if not, go free face, as all real Americans are doing, and enjoy the Christmas season. Apparently, there is a deplorable lack of New Year's resolutions this year. Well, I have one. To resist. Yeah, that's right. I'm going to restore and rejuvenate that inner rugged individual the left has tried so hard to put behind a mask and lockdown, and I'm going to resist. So, you find a creative way to resist, there's your revolution resolution. Remember, folks, those Twilight Zone episodes where people wore masks? They were supposed to make you think, not make you copy them. Family values should be emphasized this Christmas with the traditions that bind us together. Sit as close as you can at dinner. Remember those wet kisses from Grandma when you were a kid? Engage in spirited debates. Don't forget to use serving dishes where everyone sticks their own personal fork and spoon in, all in the interest of sharing. Remind everyone that closing churches violates the First Amendment. Closing businesses without criminal convictions violates our Fifth Amendment right to life, liberty, and property. And closing schools denies our kids their right to an education. So, you may want to point that out to your governors and mayors this festive season so they understand their transgressions and can repent. I would have suggested you go to New York this year, but quite frankly, they don't have the balls to celebrate New Year's. No, really, the ball isn't dropping. Maybe we should rename Times Square Tiananmen Square West. Remember that there are many great gifts you can share this Christmas, particularly AR-15s and AK-47s. Those tend to warm the heart. As we say at Action Radio, world peace through strength. Just remember that everything the government tells you is wrong. So if you want to avoid COVID, don't take the vaccine. Go to the beach instead. Get that sunshine and vitamin D. Stay away from home. Engage in commerce and business. Travel as much as you can. Work out at crowded gyms. Drive extensively, preferably with the windows open. Patronize businesses that are in open rebellion. And resist, resist, resist the Dr. Dictatorship. In closing, let me just say Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and Happy Hanukkah. Muslims, you don't have a holiday at this time, so just go eat Chinese food on Christmas Eve and meet some really nice Jewish folks. Hey, they might be your neighbors. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio.
Who says we don't have fun here? Let's bring back, we got Chansey who's live now, we got Chef Paulette, and Pianchi's on the line too. I'm going to make his line live. I make everybody's line live. You guys can have a free-for-all. Let's go to Chansey now and see what's happening in the world of wellness. Start over, Greg. Wine, Weed, and Wellness. I just love that title. What's going on, Chansey? Do you like my Christmas greeting? Do you feel warm and fuzzy?
Yes, I do. I love it. That's awesome.
Okay. I want an AR-15 for Christmas and ammo. Ammo. Ammo warms the heart.
Ammo does warm the heart. Yeah. There's a guy that lives in my neighborhood that's been shooting like an automatic gun at some point during the day, pretty much every day.
Does he have some range out back or something or what?
No. He's probably created one at his house. Okay. So he's just letting everybody know that we're good and safe here. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
An armed neighbor is a safe neighbor.
No, I just wanted to talk about the Yeah, that's exactly right. The stress of the holidays and all the things that come along with shopping and spending time with family and not knowing what to buy so-and-so because so-and-so has everything. I literally bought somebody a ball of olive oil the other day because that's all I know to get them. So there's some times where you just have to give up and know that it is the thought that counts.
But people are getting so stressed out, though. This is the thing that fascinates me. I mean, the drivers suck right now. I mean, people are cutting people off. They're fighting over parking spaces. You know, Merry Christmas, damn it. This is a holiday. You know, and it's they're totally losing the whole meaning of this. It's just, you know, be kind to your fellow person.
Absolutely.
Peace and goodwill to all people. What's going on? Chancey, what's going on here? It's like the holidays are reversed. It's becoming, you know, it's like the most stressful time of the year. It's the most stressful time of the year. Andy Williams. Anyway, Chancey?
No, yeah, that's why. It's because they shut us down and then they let us out for just a little bit so that we can spend money and boost the economy, kind of, sort of. And then they lock us back down and tell us not to spend time with our family. But definitely ship that present across the world so that you worry about it for 4 weeks and wonder where it's going to be or if it's going to get there. So they program it into you to get the best thing, the most expensive thing. Everybody's got to have it. Here's the rave this week. What are you buying your kid? You're not a good parent. Why'd you do that? Why'd you get them that? You know, so it's been like that for years. But during something like that, this that's going on to where it's, nobody has money. And if they do have money, they don't know if they're going to have it next week. But then they feel like they still got to spend as much as they did last year because now everybody's together again. So, yeah, it's a mental game. It always is.
Well, especially people that go into debt at Christmas buying presents. They might not have an income in a month or two.
Yeah.
You know, things slow down. Things get locked down. Yeah. Well, here, and this goes for all of you. The lines are open. Like I said, we've got Bianchi, Josie, Paulette, Chancey, and Jean. So all you folks are free to. I've talked enough. You know, I want to let you guys kind of have at this. But you look at the doom and gloom message that's coming out tonight from, you know, Biden the murderous. You know, it's just, I like that title. It's absolutely insane what this person is doing. You vaccinate people, we're going to save you. You defectors, you know, you rebels, we hope you die in the streets in mass numbers. It's going to be a dangerous, dark winter for you. We don't care what happens to you. It's really disgusting what's going on. You want to talk about stress? You know, and what about the people that are panicked over their non-vaccinated, their healthy DNA family members? There's a lot of stress caused by people that are trying to get other people vaccinated, which actually not in their interest. I mean, there's so much stress upon stress, all caused by someone that's shouldn't even be in the White House. So what about the vaccine stress? Let's add that to the list. Chancey, what do you think?
It's definitely a thing. I have best friends who aren't going home for Christmas because they've been told they can't if they're not vaccinated. Like, they literally, their grandmother has said, if you don't get the shot, you can't come to Christmas dinner. And so it's
there's
one of those
a family
things
value for
me.
You. Yeah.
Man, how come I can't have that family?
I know. That's what I said. I was like, well, that would just be an easy answer for me. I'd be like, all right, peace out, Nana. Like, but it would help you cut off the ones that don't want to have, that you've had to deal with forever, because we cannot choose our family. So,
well, you know, it's funny. Yeah. Talking about stress. Stress is the number one opposite immune builder. It totally defeats your immune. So if you have stress, you're messing up your immune. You're making yourself sick literally with stress. And I do have one little suggestion to anybody during the holidays who is stressed, because that's me 100%. I mean, you know, in fact, I mean, you know, I don't know if y'all know this or not. And every year I say, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to be stressed. This is going to be the year I'm not going to be stressed. Well, you know, I mean, in all of the hospitals, Lakeview, Friary, all of the hospitals, everybody, people want to die. I mean, because it's like, it gets to be so doggone stressful. I mean, you know, what's that? It's a wonderful life, whatever. But anyway, but I do have one suggestion, one thing that might help. Get yourself a good repertoire, maybe 5 really belly laughable or jokes, and, you know, put them on your phone, you know, either your photos or in your notes. And if you, you know, get that little feeling like I'm getting ready to choke somebody or you know, just look down at that meme or look down that, and then you give yourself a good little belly laugh and just say, it just doesn't matter. Who cares? And just laugh. Because, you know, laughter is actually a medicine too. And laughter really helps with.
Absolutely.
So.
Well, I want to jump in this a little bit because this is one of those big scientific issues. I think it was Norman Cousins who actually had a terminal diagnosis of cancer and started watching Marx Brothers movies and Three Stooges and actually laughed himself, you know, back to health. So Chancey Paulette, mm-hmm. if you know what actually goes on in your body, when you're laughing, there's a biochemical change that takes place. Do either of you know how that works exactly? And why it's so beneficial? I mean, can we laugh our stress away?
Well, I know, I know you're not asking me because you know I'm not a sciencey person.
But you can still guess. I mean, you can still give your observation. And then I get to Chancey. She probably is maybe a little bit, she gets a little bit more into the science. But that's okay. Like I say, every question I ask you is research material for next week. So don't worry about it. What you can answer today. I do that to everybody, Paulette. Not just you.
Well, no, that's what I mean.
All right, Chancey, what do you think about that? Yeah, what actually goes on when you laugh? What's happening in the body?
Stress hormones, epinephrine. Are you
there?
Yeah,
okay, no. Yeah. Yep. You're fine.
Okay,
Go ahead.
Yeah, the epinephrine and cortisol decrease are basically the two things. So, I don't know, it's the fat hormone and then the one that's around the heart, and then your dopamine and your serotonin increase. I could Google it, but it's basically just hormones start doing what they're supposed to do to make you happy, because laughter is a voluntary sound. So you can fake it as well, but it's also
involuntary.
When I
find something fun, it's probably the most involuntary thing I do. What are you talking about? It's nothing voluntary about my laughter. It just happens. It just, you know, I find that interesting. But anyway, go ahead. Yeah. No, then I get to Pianchi in the back here. Okay. Well, Pianchi, you got any stress for the holidays? Let's bring you in the conversation here. Pianchi?
No, I'm going to be watching Jimmy Stewart. I'm going to be
It's
singing.
A Wonderful Life?
Yes, and Kate Smith, God Bless America, and I give out little flags and American flag pins. Hey, everyone.
Okay.
Well,
Merry Christmas.
Yes. Well, listen, I have to say goodbye to you guys, but I just want to say thank you for having me on the show today, Greg. And if anybody's bored tonight, 7 p.m. Central, come watch my show. It'll be unforgettable, www.twitch.com/naughtytonight. I hope you guys have a very Merry Christmas, and I appreciate you guys so much.
Well, Merry Christmas to you, Paulette. Thanks so much for coming on.
Yes, God bless
you in a few minutes.
Too.
Okay.
Well, she'll be on next week, hopefully. Well, actually, and that's the thing, too. Any of you that have holidays and things like that, I mean, next week is the week people traditionally do nothing. I'll be broadcasting. In fact, Friday's our anniversary. So this will mark the end of 3 years of broadcast on Blog Talk Radio, starting the new season Monday, our fourth season, our fourth year here on Blog Talk. So we're getting up there. We're getting some things accomplished. It's kind of cool. All right, Chancey, back to you. Holidays, stress, stuff. And Pianchi and Josie and Jean, feel free to just leap right in. Yeah, mm-hmm. Chancey.
Yeah, no, that's what I was talking about. It's just little things like that. So basically you should be doing something for yourself every day. So if that's laughter, if that's watching a movie, if that's scrolling through your Facebook for a few minutes, every single day during the holidays, every day, period, you should do something that makes you laugh or makes you happy. And that is just joyful. That doesn't anything that just brings joy and pleasure to your life. And it's so funny that people think that they don't have time for just the smallest thing. Even just reading a few pages of a book changes your complete brainwaves. And then the second thing is being kind to yourself. So if you're not kind, the reason you're not kind to others is because you haven't been kind to yourself. And we all know that person who's just awful at the holidays. They're just nothing's right, nothing's making them happy. They spent too much money. They have to complain about buying the gift and how horrible the cashier person was. You know, it's just on and on and on. And it's more than likely, if you look deep into their life, they're not kind to themselves. They don't like themselves. They're unhappy. So when we start being kind to ourselves, even just looking in the mirror and saying, I like my makeup today, or I like my hair today, it changes your brainwaves. So
I like my makeup today.
Again,
I look fabulous, by the way.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
Well, here's a question. Greg, you would appreciate this. Sorry to interrupt, but
no, go ahead.
Music,
you're supposed to.
Especially dance can just totally uplift how you're feeling, and you don't have to dance long. You had a few seconds. Just move around. If you can't move your arms, but just move your head. Mm-hmm. It's amazing what that will do.
Yes.
Well,
and you know,
I should remind folks, my band
sure.
Starfish is playing New Year's Eve at the VFW on Avalon Road here in Milton. So that's my outlet. I play rock and roll. So, yeah, so I play guitar. I've been playing guitar for years and years. And then as soon as this radio show makes me a small fortune, I'm going to get a jet and fly it upside down and go across the country, pick up Bianchi, and we're gonna rock and roll in the air. Right, dude?
Yes.
And can I say?
Yeah, go ahead, Jesse.
Can I say, Gene, you're absolutely right. No matter how exhausted from a whole day at work at my store, I do Zumba 4 days a week, and my husband goes, how do you do it? You're exhausted. You've been on your feet all day long. Mm-hmm. I said, as soon as I hear the music, I forget about my stress at the store for the mm-hmm. day, mm-hmm. and I just start dancing for an hour, sometimes 90 minutes we do. It depends on the day. But
well,
I
you have to have an outlet.
Week, yeah. And it helps me.
We should talk about Chancey about this too, because Jean made a comment earlier in the show. She's had enough of the doom and gloom stuff. She says, you want to talk about something fun? So we discussed what would be the best holiday dinner for Christmas. You know, and I absolutely agree with that. I'll do that too. This is why I break up things with funny stuff. This is why I break up the show. And when I'm working hard, I have to take breaks, and I'll go look at Facebook mm-hmm. for. I'll do something, you know, completely nonsensical, or I'll write or do something, you know, for the show that's absurd. I like absurd. I do absurd really well. I mean, how many shows have a Chinese gong, for example? We do. Why? Because it's funny. You know?
I think one day, one day when I get control of the controls, that thing is going to be gone. It's a little too powerful.
I could turn it down, but it's loud for a reason. It's actually loud for a reason.
I know.
Well, let me turn it down and see if this is better.
Yeah.
Is this better? Nah, that's not good. I like it powerful.
Doesn't have the same effect.
See, the gong the gong has a reason. That's when people start really arguing uncontrollably. That's when I play the gong. I play it then just for fun.
Well, look what laughter has got Kamala Harris. She laughs all the time.
Yeah, but she's compulsively stupid, though. Well, here's the question. Does this woman have a brain in her head, or is she just self-conscious?
She's
or
like a hyena. She's
okay.
A hyena.
Hmm.
Well, like going back to what she was saying about dancing and music, the music changes you. So music is healing. Sound is healing. And that's why it can give you that extra boost of whatever. Like you can be in the most awful mood and hear your favorite song. And usually, unless it's something horrible, horrible, you're going to at least smile, remember a memory, because sound creates memories and sound creates healing no matter what. So that's why it's so powerful. And that's why I use it in all types of ways. So yeah, that's awesome. I love that, because I can do the same thing. I can dance and do all kinds of things even when I'm super exhausted.
Well, there's a whole branch of medicine, music therapy, isn't there? Like art therapy?
Yeah, sound therapy, vibrational therapy. Yes, that's what I do. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's talk about that, because music is the vibrations. So why is rock and roll so popular? Is there a vibration, those middle low frequencies, you know, that bass and guitar are both mid-range instruments, relatively speaking. You know, the drums are fairly low and the cymbals are like ultra high pitch, just in terms of frequency. So what is it about rock and roll music? Is there, you know, I mean, you listen to classical, well, you can sometimes feel it. You know, you can listen to pop, that can be pretty outrageous too, but you feel rock and roll. I mean, rock and roll goes through you. And so is that part of the attraction to it, do you think?
Absolutely.
Jesse? Okay.
Oh, absolutely. And then that's also the thing. Unfortunately, rock and roll music at times is the most unhealthy music, but you yet come back to it over and over again.
Why? Right.
And
what
then that is the level of decibels that it's played at is unhealthy usually. So even at the good frequency, it's played at such a loud, destructive sound to the ears that it's unhealthy, but that's what I'm getting at, is that the counterintuitive part is that the joy that it brings and the happiness that it brings releases hormones again. So even if you're okay, so most people are like, I don't care, I'm still going to rock out to that. And that's why, is because you crave that happiness, that joy that it gives you. So it's like it's really crazy how two different things, you know, are going on.
You know, I've worn earplugs
since
I was like 18, you know, and you get those foam earplugs, they're 50 cents at a drugstore. And you're the one walking out. People think, oh, look at this idiot wearing earplugs. I said, yeah, but I'll be able to hear at the end of this concert. And you walk out, you take your earplugs out, and you go, no ringing. This is great. You know, you drop like 30, 40 decibels, and you're fine.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it's so this
like
is a curable.
Chuck Berry song. Chuck Berry song, My Ding-a-Ling. That got you happy.
Yeah. See that Paulette's not here right now. Yeah, no, yeah.
What
now? Music and, I said, too bad Paulette's not here right now. I know she'd have a comment, but that's okay. She had to bring up the sexist thing.
No, I mean, that's what we're talking about.
Well, yeah, but I mean, yeah, music, excuse me. I mean, but the effects of all these things, you know, music, laughter, all this stuff. And it's almost like the, well, here's a question for you. Would Christmas, if we took all the presents out of Christmas, would we take most of the stress out? Because I think most people give the best presents to themselves. I mean, I buy myself a guitar every couple of years, you know. So nobody could order me one. No one would know what I want. I want a specific, very specific guitars here. They're all, you know, custom ordered from G&L, because G&L allows you to, you know, pay regular prices and get custom guitars. There's no way anybody could order one for me. I wouldn't want it. It'd be the wrong color, wrong style, wrong neck size, wrong everything. So if we got rid of presents from Christmas, would we lose much of the holiday? Would we just stop giving presents?
I think, Greg, I think the day of, people would be even more stressed, because I think family, who they hang out for the holidays, sometimes can cause them undue stress. And sometimes it's their own doing.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that's the thing that I get at, is that we have to sometimes just look at it like we're choosing this. Like, I know good and well that my family, there's half of my family, if you truly ask them what they want for Christmas, they rather you not get them anything, because then they're either going to take it back, or they're going to have to act like they like it, or they, at this point in their life, they could probably buy themselves what they want. So unless it's like a thoughtful gift, where I've changed my mindset is I get things people can use and they'll be gone. So if I know that their favorite spice is cumin, I'll buy them a really nice, you know, Mexican spice set or something. You know, that's easy. Yes, it's spices, and you start talking to yourself like, oh, God, they don't need spices. They can go to the store and buy them. Well, yes, it can, you know. So if you think of little things like that and just try to turn it around, and what can this person – what have you seen this person use, and what have you seen this person buy, versus trying to get them something that they don't have, or that they – you know, if you have the financial ability, then that turns things around. You know, well – oh, I know they want this and they don't have the money to buy it, then that's something that you can bless them with. But trying to prove a point is where I think people get out of hand. They're just like, well, I know so-and-so is going to get them this, so I've got to get them this. And
oh, gift competition? That's got to be horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to step back and just what do you see them using and being enjoy while they're using it, even if it's a scarf or something. You know, it's little things that you can do for people that are thoughtful.
Yeah. It's like so many things can go wrong. Wrong present, wrong dinner, wrong cooking time, wrong location, wrong weather, wrong guest, wrong family members.
I've been somewhere where people have like three sets of dishes that were the same. Yeah.
What's that, Chelsea?
I said I've been somewhere where people got like three sets of the same thing, you know, and it's because everybody knew that they liked it, and now they've got to take two of them back, you know. So it's, yeah, I don't know. That happens a lot, but the best thing to do is just step back and ask yourself what's going on in your life that people, you know, people are going to do for you that you rather them not. And so if that's happening with you, it's probably happening with them. And then just take a deep breath and realize whatever you get will be fine. And if not, they don't need to be in your life.
Yeah, basically, hey, talk about this ahead of time. You know, if they could talk about their family dinner ahead of time, say, what do you want? What do you not want? Do you want to do presents? Do you want to not do presents? Then, of course, people have to be honest, too, and it doesn't always work out that way. Josie.
What I do is I buy my own gifts. So my husband doesn't have to bother, or my daughter. I buy what I like, and we wrap it together, me and my daughter, and she does the same thing.
So well, that's interesting.
Open,
that's what I
because
do.
I know what I want, and I don't want my husband to buy me something that I have to take back. I don't have time. So he says, you do the shopping, buy what you want, and we wrap it, and we've been doing that for years, and we're happy. And my daughter, we're following the same footsteps, too. She said, I want this and this and that, Mom. I want that. And then we know what we're getting, and it's just a surprise for Daddy because Daddy doesn't know what we bought.
Mm-hmm.
So we really are doing it for my husband, but we know what we want.
You don't give him a tie, do you?
Mm-hmm. I love it.
You don't give
it.
Your husband a tie, do you?
No.
Good. Men hate ties. They say they like them, but still a sign of slavery as far as I'm concerned. I want to abolish the tie. I actually had a campaign on that for a while. Stop giving ties. Put them out of business. Get rid of those things.
I know.
Why would a grown man want a noose around his neck?
And I do all the shopping for my husband normally for his clothes and everything because –
if he goes shopping, he buys something that is horrible. And then I'm like, I don't like it. He goes, that's it. For years and years now, I do the shopping because he wants to please me, and I want to make sure he looks good. He said, you know what? No matter what I do, you don't like it, so you do the shopping. So that's what our family
is
all
about. Here's another time I really wish Paulette was back here. Women like to buy guys clothes that they think they'll look good in, whether the guy wants to wear it or not. It's like women think they know
but
what
they
guys look good in. Eventually, but it's really hysterical. I mean, I'd get clothes that I was given when I was a kid. Sometimes I wouldn't wear it for like 3 years, and eventually I'd say, well, okay, then maybe I'll try it now. I was notorious for that with sweaters especially. But why is it women think that they always know what's best for guys for clothing? I'm just curious.
Well, let me tell you quickly. What happened is the men, they never want to get rid of clothes. Used to go to Goodwill to buy stuff to bring on my mission trips, you cannot find a good pair of jeans. You cannot find a good shirt because they're either full of holes or with stain or with stuff because the men don't get rid of their clothes. So the wife has to take care of that.
Until
you know, buy
late.
A new clothes and get rid of the old ones.
Okay. I'm just curious. Someone else had a comment.
Well, to see. And where I go from it is because, like, in my generation, my girlfriends want to make their boys, their guys wear what looks good on Instagram or what looks good on TikTok or whatever. And, like, you just need to let it go. Like, because either it's going to start an argument or the guy's going to feel like you don't think he's attractive enough in a T-shirt and jeans. So you just eventually, or what I have done, I just eventually start buying things that I know he'll wear if I buy something. Because if you buy something he doesn't want to wear, and then you force him to wear it, but that's just an age thing. Like there are, like my dad would probably wear anything my mom bought him, you know, before, you know. But like in the 30s and stuff like that, like I hear my guy friends complaining about that. Like, I've got to wear this polo and I've got to wear these khakis. Like, just let him be happy and he'll be attractive in anything that you put in, that he wears because he's happy, you know? And so that's a whole thing that I see my girlfriend struggling with. They buy like a $80 button-up shirt and then he gets something on it and then she complains that he got something on it. I'm like, well, you spent the $80, he didn't, you know? So you just have to sometimes... Like, why are you with him if you don't like the way that he dresses in that aspect?
Well,
not like she's talking about is that he's happy to wear it if she buys him. But
is she with him to show him off? You know, or is she with him to be with him?
There's a fine line. Like, it's different when the husband is just like, whatever, I don't care. You know, buy me, I'll wear it, you know, and then is happy about it. But when it's becoming like a, no, you're wearing this and we're going out to eat tonight and you're going to wear what I say. And it's like, really? Like, you need to back off. So we wouldn't want that. Or there's sometimes where you would want your guy to pick you out something like, what do you want me to wear tonight? You know, but not all the time. Like, if he was telling you what to wear all the time, it wouldn't be the same, you know? But it's different what she's talking about, Jean. Like, I can tell, you know, like, not Jean. I am so bad with names because I've not met y'all. Josie. When I see you in person, I will remember you forever. Josie.
Well, you're on radio, and you guys haven't met. In fact, one of the things I had planned, actually,
I was
talking to talking with Chancey about this.
Somebody, I'll meet them.
No, like I met Chancey and Josie I've known for a long time. And but those of us, there's like five or six of us that are, I mean, Donnie's around this area. Derek Park is in this area. There's a few people that some of the folks behind the scenes are in this area. We all need to get together just to sort of show our faces.
Yeah.
Oh, you do this? We're all like, oh, is that what you look like? You know,
going back to the dressing up, like for example, this Sunday, my husband wanted to wear a cowboy hat, and I said, "Where are your boots?" He said, "Why?" I said, "It just doesn't go. I mean, you're gonna wear a cowboy hat and no boots." So he took my advice, and he even changed it to dressy pants with boots. They look kind of ridiculous with a flare leg. I said, you need jeans, honey. And then he was very thankful. He said, wow, I guess, thank God I have you to help me. So that's what we're helpmates to help each other to look. I want my husband to look good all the time, you know, and not because I want him to wear that, but I want for him to look sharp. And all the ladies were like, oh, my God, what happened to you? And, you know, just stuff like that at church.
Yes. And I do. I think it's everybody's like, you know, you're bringing up and what you do every day and who you who you go and hang out with every day, and like people that see you every day. It just matters if that's something that's big in your life. And that is to some people, you know, some people like,
yeah.
they plan their outfits, they pick out their clothes, they shop for like that shoe goes with those jeans and that color comes with that.
Yeah.
And that's awesome. That,
yeah.
You know, and that's
yeah.
appearing. Yeah.
And then
it's
and
also
you
where you start buying
those little, I heard you talking about those young men from your girlfriend and all that. I'm a businesswoman. We do have plenty of money, but I'm a missionary, and I'm always thinking like a missionary mind. So my daughter
yeah.
grew up not getting hooked with brand names. So when my daughter
yes.
needed jeans, we went to Goodwill in Miami, and I bought her about six, seven mm-hmm. pairs of jeans. Why am I going to pay
right.
$50 for a pair of jeans or $60? Never, never. And then
never.
One of my friends says, but you have a lot of money. Why you? Because I don't want to do that. My
right.
daughter is trained not to ask for brand names. Never, never. I bought her a Michael Kors
mm-hmm.
watch.
Yeah.
She never put it on because she said, I don't care about that. So, you know,
yeah.
so you have to
yeah.
teach him.
Mm-hmm. You do. And that's the thing is a lot of people aren't taught, you know, they're not taught or it doesn't matter. And then they get with someone
mm-hmm.
that it matters. And then it's like, well, wait a minute. This didn't matter half of my childhood. Why does this matter now? And so then it becomes
yes.
an issue. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Right.
So, like, if the mom didn't care and the mom just let the boy wear whatever or the girl wear whatever, and then they get with someone who's like, well, no, we're wearing cashmere to the winter Christmas, you know, it becomes an issue. And so that's where you got to just let it go sometimes. But other than that, I'm excited about Christmas and happy to celebrate it with my family. And I will probably wear my pajamas at this point, but it's going to be a good time. I'm excited to get with everybody and swap out gifts. But I think that is an issue. I don't think people think of that anymore. You know, they try to, what am I going to do when I get there? What are we going to do when we get there? Just get there and see, you know?
You know, it's funny. It's been so long since I've
had
a family kind of like, you know, big Christmas dinner. I actually tried that before I moved to California back in my early 20s. And because I was, you know, and I was actually somewhat big into family before I realized
Hello?
The, am I not here? No, I should be on. Hello?
Yep, you're on.
Okay, good.
Okay.
Chancey, you on? Maybe you're having, Chancey's having trouble. Anyway,
yeah,
you never know with the show. I mean, something would just drop off and there's no notice of it. But, you know, and I'm not going to explain the whole family situation, but it's pretty bad. And basically, they abandoned me, so I abandoned them. So it's been a long time since I really celebrated holidays like that. And for me, it's kind of interesting. I don't, you know, I celebrate every day. Every day that I can do this show is a holiday. You know, every day that I can do Action Radio. I mean, this stuff's fun for me. Even the most controversial, depressing, horrible news, it's still, you know, the process. I enjoy the process of doing it. So I've never been this big a holiday person, especially since, like I say, my rather bizarre family situation. So there's a lot of folks like me, I think, out there that, you know, there's a pressure to be somewhere at Christmas or be with folks at Christmas. And I like doing
yeah.
nothing at Christmas. And it's one of the few days of the year everybody else is busy
yeah.
doing something. I don't have to do anything. I can play guitar all day.
Yeah.
So I can watch, you know, James Bond movies. I mean, I don't care. You know, I mean, I know the meaning of Christmas. I watched the Charlie Brown Christmas special. I listened to Linus, so I know what it's all about, right? But we haven't even talked about Christmas specials or lack thereof. But for a lot of people, there's a pressure because it's a holiday. You have to do something. And quite frankly, there's a lot of things that I don't want to do on a holiday. And it's not an insult to anybody else. I've had invitations, and I love people invite me over to do stuff. But quite frankly, you know, for me, I don't need, you know, because I don't like getting caught up in all that and the making the conversation and all the things I have to do. I'm really happier on my own. So about a solitary folks, and I'm in a creative
yeah.
process. Yeah,
that's my favorite kind of holiday.
Yeah, there you go.
Yes, me too. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well,
so we all like doing nothing.
My husband. Yeah, it's
enjoy
funny because
it
like
the day
when I'm
what it is.
Yes, just enjoy it. Just let it be a day that you enjoy, and that. But I mean, we'll never change that. I guess there's so many people that's where I've gotten. Just I give my family since we moved to Florida. We lived in Alabama, and most of our family still lives in Alabama. They get one day. So it used to be you had to be here at 12, you had to be here at 2, you had to be there at 4 because you're married and you've got separate families. My role, like mid-marriage, was they get one day, and if they want it, then if they want us there, they'll tell us when to be there, and we'll be there. And then other than that, I'm not running around like crazy, going to 5 different lunches and not being able to eat at any of them because you're having to go somewhere else and in an hour. So I just, yeah. So if people can start setting traditions themselves of what they want to do and just letting everybody else fall in, it's hard, mm-hmm. but it works. They'll get over it.
But that's a stress remover. The opposite of stress is control, right? I mean, that's the way I see it.
Yeah.
So if you're in control of your life, if you're making decisions, you know, and if people don't feel...
And there for a while, I mean, it is...
Yeah, go ahead.
No, Jesse? It's just, you know, when you first come into a family, you feel like you have to do things. So that's some advice is like, just talk to someone, talk to the mother-in-law, talk to the sister, talk to the aunt, if that's your thing. Because some people love big Christmases. And I am one of those people who I love going to something like that, but not if I'm, you know, all over the place and not being able to enjoy it. So make it a point to when you join a family, talk to them about that stuff and have a mindset of what they're used to and then what you could bring in or change or add to, and it usually goes okay. I mean, there's going to be someone who's like, nope, Christmas morning, you're all eating breakfast here, and then you got to figure it out if that's what you want to do. But where you were saying just doing nothing on Christmas, you know, or nothing around the holidays, there's plenty of people who that makes them happy. So if they don't want to come to your Christmas, that doesn't mean it's you. It's just they're happier. Let them be happy.
Yeah, I'm going to be happy. I've already put
together
my next car. Hey, we got five
Greg,
seconds, folks.
I just want to say Merry Christmas, Feliz Navidad. You're almost off the air.
I am off the air.
Yeah.
Feliz Navidad.
Merry Christmas.
Have a good day.
what's the Jose Feliciano song? Feliz Navidad.
Prospero
año y felicidad.
Feliz Navidad.
Feliz Navidad, prospero año y felicidad.
Prospero año y felicidad.
Yeah, see, that's what I learned from doing tours on cable car. I'll tell you about that another day. Thanks, everybody. Greg Penglis for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction and our wonderful improved website at www.writeyourlaws.com, WRIteYourLaws. This has been fun. Yeah, we sort of lightened up a little bit. We should do that more often. All right, talk to you all tomorrow. 7 o'clock Eastern, 6 Central, 5 Mountain, 4 Pacific, and the rest of the world. Yeah, you'll figure it out.